The Preston and Steve Daily Podcast is presented by Acme. Acme, fresh foods, local flavors, and the official supermarket of MMR's Preston and Steve Show.
93.3 WMMR, audio on demand, presents the Preston and Steve Show podcast. And now, Preston and Steve's news updates with Kathy Romano.
Today is Thursday, November 7th. Good morning, Kathy.
Good morning. In the news this morning, the trial for Sean Kratz, one of the men accused of murdering a group of friends in Bucks County 2 years ago, began Wednesday. Prosecutors say 22-year-old Kratz of Northeast Philadelphia helped his cousin, 22-year-old Cosmo DiNardo, kill three of four men back in 2017. Bucks County prosecutors have alleged that DiNardo lured the four victims, ages 19 to 22, to his family's Solberry farm under the guise of making marijuana deals. The victims' bodies were found after a five-day search. Three of them were set afire and placed in a 12-foot-deep oil tank that was converted into a pig roaster. Kratz walked away from a plea deal earlier this year. Bucks County District Attorney Kate Kohler said in her opening statements that she painted Kratz as a cold-blooded killer who was on a mission to kill, rob, burn, and bury bodies along with his cousin. Now, Kohler told jurors that Kratz killed one of the victims and helped while DiNardo killed two others, then helped clean and cover up the evidence. Kratz's attorney, Charles Peruto, painted a different picture, calling his client an idiot and slow with a tested IQ of 79. Peruto told the jury that his client is not a killer, but rather too terrified and lacking the intelligent wherewithal to do anything that would have stopped the lunatic DiNardo.
So when they're employing this, when they're giving an IQ assessment or mental stability assessment, I've heard them use the word idiot in court. So is that an acceptable?
So, it might be.
There are. Yeah, like more. Did I learn it on this show?
Dumbass, like, I know, used to be the go-to.
No, like moron. Moron is an IQ level.
Right.
You know, and then people have adopted it into just,
yeah, there,
you know,
there are words that have changed into insults, like ignorant, right, things like that have legitimate meanings.
Yeah. So I think idiot might still float in that legal.
It very well might.
Yeah.
But this guy's
dumbass.
That's what it sounds like, though. You're Honor, my client's an idiot.
He's so stupid.
He's a dumbass.
I mean, come on.
Well, it says in quotes that he referred to him as an idiot and slow.
Okay. Yeah. Listen,
did you say your client's a jerk off?
It depends on the state, Steve, like most of these things that we talk about. But the California Penal Code and some of the other states, it's basically persons who are mentally incapacitated.
Okay. So, yeah. It's applicable here.
Yeah.
Because, Nick, and you can even see all the various anchors who are reporting. Kathy just sort of stalled a little bit saying it. He called him an idiot.
Yeah. Oh, man. I heard somebody, and pardon me because I'm not using this word out of turn here, but I heard somebody use the word retarded.
Right.
But they weren't, it wasn't.
It was a clinical word.
It was a clinical word.
Initially, yeah.
And they weren't even talking about a person. They were talking about like a.
Break retarded or something?
Like, yes.
Yeah.
But when I heard it, it was jarring.
Like,
I was like, oh, my God, you can't say that.
When you can retard the progress of something,
yes,
there's various applications of the word. But yeah, I know it's the way, these things get.
And in lexicon, throughout history, words can become taboo over time.
And they
change. And you have new words that you have to get used to. And that's
kind of
what it is.
Yeah. Used to be a wedding blessing.
Right. It's evolved.
Yeah. Now what is it?
A wedding blessing.
I think like 200 years ago, you were actually allowed to say.
How did we get here from this story?
Nanapuya.
Our show.
Nanapuya.
Okay, so Peruto said that Kratz was being preyed upon by a psychopath. Kohler, however, said that there were multiple times that Kratz could have called for help or even turned the gun on DiNardo. She called the slayings just something fun to do for the day because they could. Peruto said that his client was later manipulated into giving a recorded confession that is expected to be played in court. Now, both men are expected to testify during the trial. The trial is expected to last about a week.
Kathy, can you please turn your vibrator off?
It's so frustrating.
I think it may.
I don't think they can hear
it. Do people hear this?
I think this one finally people can hear.
Okay.
Because we have construction that's been going on for months. You've heard us talk about that here at our building. And we have noises that we can hear in this soundproof room because there's adjacent work being done, you know, to rooms next to us. And okay.
Can you
listeners,
hear this?
Can you hear this?
Yeah.
Let us know if you can hear that via the text messages, because we've been hearing stuff for weeks, months now, that we think has been too faint for you, the listener, to be able to hear. I think it finally might be close enough and loud enough that our listeners can hear it.
I think you're right. The little footage that Nick Murphy got, you came in and you said, you need to hear how loud it is over Nick Murphy's workstation.
They were drilling or doing something right over his area. And, I mean, it was stupid loud.
Yeah.
And I understand they got to get their work done. But
sure.
I was like, you think it's bad in here? You got to hear where Murph is.
I don't know. So I record in another studio on Mondays, and it is unbelievable, like louder than what we're hearing right now, and you can't hear anything on the mic.
Okay. No. Well, that's with the compression and everything, the processing on the microphones helps eliminate room noise.
So it's just weird, though, because when they do, like, road construction, a lot of time, like, the highways and stuff like that, they'll do it overnight because they're highly trafficked during the day. Like,
is overnight.
What I'm saying, I mean, they usually wrap up the road construction around 6 a.m. or whatever.
They are.
This is a place of business. It's not just us. I mean, there are other places. Like, can't they work from...
They're working all night.
They work all night.
You missed the shift change. When I come in right before 5 a.m.,
exactly.
They're leaving.
They're here.
I'm coming
really?
In. The new shift is coming in. Dude, they work all night.
They've been working all night for months.
They do.
Shouldn't they be done by now?
Well, in fact... not to go too much into this, but there's an atrium that they're building outside in front of us, and that doesn't that most of that the stuff that's going to be the real noisy stuff is going to happen in the overnight.
Okay.
Okay, so DiNardo pleaded guilty to three killings, and that of a 19-year-old as well. So there was 19-year-old Dean Finicciaro of Middletown Township, 21-year-old Thomas Mayo of Plumstead, 22-year-old Mark Sturgis of Pennsburg, and then 19-year-old Jimmy Patrick of Newtown. DiNardo is serving a life sentence.
And it's over marijuana, right, Kath?
They said that they...
it was a drug
They were
purchase.
Lured there, for a marijuana deal. Okay. Do you want to?
Well, I'm checking our text messages. Though I don't think our messages are working because we haven't gotten a message in over an hour. We almost always are getting them constantly through the morning. So, of course, that's broken too.
Okay.
All right, let's go.
How about I go on with news? Yeah. A 10-year-old boy walking home from school was shot in the head when gunfire erupted from a passing car, according to Philadelphia police. It happened at 3:30 Wednesday in the city's Frankford section. Deputy Commissioner Joe Sullivan said the gunfire came from the backseat of a red or maroon Pontiac G6. The boy fell to the sidewalk after being shot. A woman rushed to try to help the child. She was cupping his head to try to stop the bleeding. The child was rushed to the hospital in critical but stable condition, and fortunately, he is expected to survive.
Amazing.
Immediately after the shooting, dozens of police officers were deployed around the city to find the red Pontiac. Philadelphia Police Captain, I'm having a rough time. I tried to print this out, and the printer is not working. And
a couple of issues this morning.
Well,
but you're doing a fine job.
I'm getting old. Okay. So Joe Sullivan, I don't think it's that. I can't see far away. It's not reading.
Give her back her vibrator.
Joe Sullivan vowed to use all department resources to find the vehicle, he said. And then Philadelphia Police Captain John Walker said a person who was shot back at the Pontiac was taken into custody, but the shooter that was inside of the car remains at large. Walker said that they recovered the man's gun from inside a recycling bin. Anyone with information is asked to call police. The shooting comes less than a month after two shootings that left a 2-year-old girl dead and an 11-month-old toddler fighting for his life.
Yeah, that's
just insane.
Yep.
The Montgomery County District Attorney filed a lawsuit against vaping industry giant Juul, claiming the company is responsible for illegal business practices aimed at turning minors into addicts. A civil complaint was filed in the Court of Common Pleas. The complaint says California-based Juul Labs Incorporated and local retailers Guru King of Prussia and Market 24 of Norristown violated Pennsylvania's consumer protection statute. The lawsuit claims Juul violators of the state law stem from their false and misleading marketing campaign designed to entice minors to vape, knowing they would quickly become addicted while knowingly concealing the actual potential harmful health effects and addictive characteristics of the product. Federal law prohibits e-cigarettes and all other tobacco sales to those under 18, but last year, 1 in 5 high school students reported vaping in the past month, according to the government survey figures. Most recently, doctors in Delaware discovered that a teen had a lung injury that they believe is related to vaping. The teen had no symptoms, but after a car accident, a CT scan showed that he had damage to his lungs.
So is there a nicotine level in this?
Oh, yeah. How much? And you can, it depends. I mean, you can go 3 milligrams.
Okay,
six,
you can pick the amount. All right.
Yep.
All right, in sports this morning.
Ball sacks are yummy.
is that?
Donovan Mitchell had 24 points and 8 assists as the Jazz beat the Sixers 106-104 last night in Utah. The Jazz improved to 4-0 at home this season after holding the Sixers to one field goal over the final 4 minutes. Joel Embiid had 27 points and 16 rebounds to lead the Sixers, who have lost 2 straight games after a 5-0 start. Ben Simmons did not play in the second half because of right shoulder soreness after bumping into Royce O'Neal's chest in the first quarter. Simmons finished with 2 points and 2 assists in 10 minutes. The Sixers wrap up their road trip with a game in Denver tomorrow night. Tip-off is at 9 o'clock. Former Eagles wide receiver Jordan Matthews is an Eagle once again. Matthews signed a deal with the team following DeSean Jackson's injury. Matthews will likely begin his third stint with the Birds after the bye week. He should be on the team for their game against the New England Patriots on November 17th. And the Flyers have a game at home tonight against the Montreal Canadiens. The puck drops at 7 o'clock. And that's what I have for you this morning.
Thank you very much, Kathy. Hang on, I'm going to go to our caller here. Mike wants to comment on the buzzing, vibrating sound. Hey, Mike, how you doing, man?
Great. Sorry to bother you guys at work.
That's okay. It's so okay. Can you hear that, that noise when we had it up?
I had to pull over because I thought my son was wrong with my car.
Wow. Well, that's a bad sign.
Oh, wow. Well, yeah. Glad nothing's wrong with your car, Mike. Appreciate it, man. Take care. All right. So, whatever. It stopped for now, which is a good thing. So,
I have good news, Preston. There is a gorgeous sunrise on the horizon.
Is there really?
Yeah. So, when we get into the break, come on over and see.
Nice. I am going to take a look. Well, that sun's going to keep it fairly warm today. 60 is going to be a high. We'll have rain later on this afternoon. Then we turn colder. 44 our high on Friday and Saturday. So, cool weekend this weekend. Guest wise on today's program, we have comedian Dave Landau who's going to be here. He's stopping by Helium Comedy Club tonight, Friday and Saturday. So he'll be here this morning, the 9 o'clock hour. Spend some time with him. I'm sure we'll give away whatever we have to give away. A lot of stuff in our supplies. So stay close for a chance to win some goodies and all that good stuff.
Yeah.
Just a reminder too. I'm getting more and more emails, questions. Support people that said they're going to be out. Camp Out for Hunger, yes, is coming up, and the Save the Date has been out there for a little while now. Just to remind you, December 2nd is our first day of broadcasting live at the Camp Out for Hunger. There's the business challenge. There's all the information you need to know. The Acme Head Start, all that stuff at PrestonandSteve.com and WMMR.com. So if you need the details, they are there and available for you.
Now, I've been asked a lot about volunteering for a camp out, and we are going to have submissions and an opportunity for you to volunteer because we need all the help that we can get.
Yes.
And, you know, people that will grab, you know, bags from listeners coming up with their donations and you know, help sort of like collating all that stuff. It's on the way. All right, so just keep checking back at the website like every single day. There is a link there. It's kind of a dead link right now, but you will be able to volunteer to help out at the Camp Out for Hunger very, very soon.
And, of course, you can volunteer with Phil Abundance, too.
Yes.
Because they certainly need the help.
Another great thing to do.
So we're getting excited for that, and we'll just keep reminding you of the impending date and all that good stuff. So, and, in fact, there's a little endorsement and a little announcement right after I hit this button that you'll hear all about. We'll be back in a moment. Stay with a stupid question up next.
Love Preston and Steve and WMMR? Check out WMMR.com for more of everything that rocks.
Say goodbye to juggling paper coupons and missing out on the best deals. Download the Acme mobile app today to have your own personal grocery guru right in your pocket. Use it to plan your shopping list like a pro. Get personalized deals on the products you buy most and choose your shopping style. Whether it's in-store, delivery, or drive-up, where an experienced Acme associate will carefully select, bag your order, even pick up your prescriptions from the pharmacy, and bring it all right to your car. Acme. Fresh foods, local flavors.
Back with more of the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
All right, so the stupid question today. Let's see, what are we going to give away today? We're going to give away a 4-pack of tickets to join us, the Preston and Steve Show, at the Happy Place. We're going to be there next Thursday night from 6 to 8 p.m., King of Prussia Mall. And you could get on board if you're going to answer this question. In the story of the Pied Piper, what two things does the Pied Piper lead away from the town?
Huh, okay.
215-263 WMMR were the two things that the Pied Piper leads away from the town. 215-263 WMMR. Call now if you know the answer. We'll go through some birthdays today, being Thursday, November 7th. Mr. Christopher Knight, Peter Brady, yes?
Here's the story.
Peter Brady, the middle son, is 62 years old today.
Just saw him in that in the special where they took the cast of the Brady Bunch.
back to the house, which they have since on the inside, we talked about this, remodeled to look exactly like the set of the TV show.
Yeah, what was that like?
It's pretty awesome. Yeah. Everyone was like, the cast was all like, what? It's so cool.
Well, I mean, because it's crazy because the way the house looks on the outside doesn't lend itself to look like on the inside.
They had to cheat a little bit.
Yeah, and but they had to do a lot. I mean, they had to gut everything and retrofit all this stuff.
Really, for an architect's house with that many kids, it's an incredibly poorly designed home.
Christopher Knight is 62 years old today. Legendary folk singer and songwriter Joni Mitchell. Celebrates her 76th birthday today.
I used to not really like Joni Mitchell, and then I began to appreciate Joni Mitchell and her jazz capabilities, and now I think she's great.
She's a very talented musician. Yeah. You got to be in the mood.
Yep, absolutely.
To hear that kind of music. But and she and Graham Nash were a couple for a long time, and the song Our House was about their time as a couple living together. If you listen to those lyrics, you'll hear it. So Joni, and in fact, she wrote the song Woodstock for
She did.
And they had a huge hit with it. There you go. Crosby, Stills, and Nash did. So Joni Mitchell is 76 years old today. Tommy Thayer is the lead guitarist of Kiss. He wears Ace Frehley's makeup nowadays, and
the good thing about him, Preston, he knows when to shut up.
Yeah, so he's learned. Ace didn't, and that's why he's not in the band anymore. Just don't piss off Gene.
Take your check and shut up.
Tommy Thayer is celebrating his 59th birthday today, and Kiss is wrapping up touring for good. They announced their final show will be in New York City. I have some more details on that. Not really details about when and where that show will be, but just information on Kiss coming up in Music News later on. But Tommy Thayer is 59 today. Another musician, Johnny Rivers.
I love Johnny Rivers.
Yeah. He was a talented singer-songwriter.
He recorded a lot of his albums, Preston, with a live audience. Yeah. So a lot of times you'll hear his albums and people go, in the back and applauding. He did a song I love called Secret Agent Man.
Yeah.
He did a song called The Poor Side of Town, which is great one song of my absolute favorites.
It's a great tune. He also did a version of Rockin' Pneumonia and the Boogie Woogie Blue.
Yeah. He's a great guitarist.
77 today. Judy Tenuta.
I always liked her.
The comedian with the...
accordion.
The accordion, thank you. Was that how she would laugh?
Yeah, she had a whole bunch of different sounds.
And... Yeah.
She's one that I didn't get. You know, so I guess she's an acquired taste.
She is an acquired taste, and she was with... she actually dated another acquired taste, Preston, Emo Phillips.
Oh, I liked Emo.
Yeah.
But her, I never quite got, but she was very successful, 63 today. Twin Brothers, now... You guys are going to have to bring me up to speed on who these people are. Jason London and Jeremy London.
Oh, yeah. They were from Dazed and Confused. Well, one of them was.
Yeah, Jason was.
Which one is really troubled?
Jeremy was on Party of Five and Seventh Heaven.
I think.
Oh, right. I remember him. So he was the boyfriend on Party of Five.
They're identical.
And one of them, didn't he like fake being kidnapped or something? Yeah, the whole deal. Like that?
There's issues. Really? Yes.
You actually remember
you were reporting on the story a while ago, and it was so convoluted. About him. Yeah, I think he was put in the trunk of a car and taken away.
Yeah, he had major issues.
So the brother, the less famous brother was the one that...
I don't know.
Either Jason
or Jeremy. It's a problem with identical twins. It's hard to distinguish which one is the complete sociopath.
Jeremy's the one that was in Mallrats, right, Case? And Jason was in... Yeah, Jeremy was in Mallrats. Jason was in Dazed and Confused.
Okay.
So they're both actors.
Yeah. And they both had successes, mostly in the mid to late 90s, but they continue to act.
All right, so the Jeremy was on Celebrity Rehab, Steve.
There you go. All right, so he
was the guy that was on Party 5 and 7th Heaven.
Okay.
So the more successful, I guess you could say, and more troubled.
Would it suck if they make the Jeremy London story and they don't call Jason London to play him?
Right. So they're 47 today. Morgan Spurlock, the TV, the filmmaker and reality TV stars, Supersize Me, 30 Days and More.
Is there a sequel to that one?
Yes, there is.
Supersize Me.
He's
doing a second Supersize Me,
Okay. He's 49 today. And then the last birthday, it is Lorde's birthday today.
Lorde.
The Australian singer. She's 23.
Lorde.
She came on the scene when she was 16, man.
Yeah.
It seems like that was just like 2 years ago.
She thundered onto the scene, became a bestie with Taylor Swift. You remember that?
Yeah.
Well, Royals is a great song. All the other stuff, it was like, learn how to write a song. Besides that... That first song, which was a really, really good
one. So you didn't care for it?
It was a follow-up, like Tennis or something like that.
Fess up.
There was a song called...
How Did Lord Hurt You?
She did not.
There was a pretty good song called...
Cincinnati Reds.
No, it wasn't Cincinnati Reds. Well, yeah. You know, Royals.
Yeah, Royals. Yeah, she's from Kansas City, I assume.
Took me a second.
We're on each other's team. Team was that one. That was a pretty good song.
Yeah.
So Lord is 23 today. But Casey says she sucks. So
yeah.
Reds.
Yeah, listen to Tennis Court, and you'll see how bad she really sucks.
Let's see if we can answer this stupid question in the story of the Pied Piper. What two things does the Pied Piper lead away from the town? 215-263-WMMR, and I will go to Phil for the answer. Hey, Phil.
Hello.
All right, Phil, what are the two things that the Pied Piper leads away from town?
Rats and small children.
Yes, exactly. Correct. Hang on.
See what?
We're going to get your information. Yeah, that's right.
Well, what kind of instrument was he playing, Preston?
It was a flute.
Yeah.
So hang on the line. We're going to get your information, Phil. And that touches on the, remember we were talking about the bizarre nature of some of those fairy tales?
Very dark. Yeah. So he was a malevolent character, was he not?
Well, they didn't pay him.
Yeah.
He led the rats out of town and they welched on him and he's like,
took the kids.
I'll take the kids.
Yeah.
So yes and no.
Yeah.
I mean, they screwed him over and he got back at him. So that's what happened.
But when he showed
it's pretty terrifying that he would lead the children away. Yes, Casey?
I was going to say, when he showed up in Shrek and you were playing that was a really cool part in the movie. Don't you remember this?
Do you think who's more talented, that character in Shrek or Lord?
This character in Shrek. All right. I've had too much coffee this morning.
I don't remember this part.
You don't remember this?
I was watching Shrek yesterday, but I came in like halfway through it. All right. But anyway, he got it right. We're going to the Happy Place for a pack of tickets for Phil. And this is next Thursday, 6 to 8 p.m. We are going to be there. The interactive and immersive exhibit features more than 15,000 square feet of playful spaces and cheerful moments. And it's been called the most Instagrammable pop-up in America. Tickets are now available at happyplace.me, and it's in the King of Prussia Mall. We'll be there until January 5th, and it's where JCPenney was inside the mall. All right, I have some stories to get to. Let's go with this. Celebrity images are being used to falsely endorse products, and some stars are taking a stand. Sandra Bullock and Ellen DeGeneres both filed lawsuits challenging what they call the celebrity endorsement theft industry.
I've seen these ads. I've seen a lot of ads that I know are not actual celebrity endorsements, but they're using their images.
Like, it'll say, I see Jennifer Aniston all the time. It says, Jennifer, look what Jennifer Aniston's wearing or something like that.
Or look, here's the fruit extract that Oprah used to lose 30 pounds.
And another one I see is, see what Jennifer Aniston says about these leggings. So it's not like, I never click on it, so I don't know what happens once you click on it. I'm sure it takes you to their site, but it's clearly not an endorsement.
Yeah, there's no way
she's involved in.
Yeah, so Sandra and Ellen, they have been apparently get used for beauty products and particularly skincare quite a bit.
I've seen the Ellen ones too. There are a lot of beauty products for her.
It's also like Lord's songwriting course, Preston.
Right. It's a scam.
It's a scam.
Unfortunately, it can be difficult to target specific individuals in these cases. The suit refers to them as does and accuses them, D-O-E-S, I don't know why.
Does.
And accuses them of using templates to swap out the name and product being sold.
Yes, because I know for a fact, and when I was seeing this thing pop, I guess it was on TMZ yesterday, both Sandra Bullock and Ellen DeGeneres appeared in the exact same ad virtually with the exact same statements and their recommendations, and so they just swapped the pictures out.
The Federal Trade Commission has warned the public about this in the past, citing other celebrity victims like Stephen Hawking and Anderson Cooper.
Stephen Hawking was, they had him for commercials for the Bowflex, Preston.
And you know that was probably
ridiculous.
Not legitimate. Hey, new outfits designed for Queen Elizabeth II will not use real fur. Buckingham Palace has just announced this. The royal spokesperson said, as new outfits are designed for the queen, any fur used will be fake.
We will no longer be using real fur.
But we will.
But we won't be using real fur. But we will.
No, but they said they're not going to throw away her fur clothing.
She'll still wear them
if she owns it, but moving forward, it's not going to be real.
The palace acknowledged the queen will continue to rewear existing outfits in her wardrobe, alluding that the decision does not mean the long-reigning monarch will dispose of real fur items that she already owns. When we were in London, you guys went to the Tower of London, right?
Yes.
Did you go into the where they keep the crown jewels and everything?
I did, yeah.
So they have a lot of also long robes and things like that that have these big fur collars on
them.
Right,
I remember
that.
Yeah, now that you mentioned it.
So those.
They're going to stay, obviously.
They're going to hang on to those.
So. She's made the personal choice to wear out in public mostly Spanx.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah. All right, fair enough. They work.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know what I've always wondered about those big furs that they would wear in these ceremonial outfits is, so there's white fur with these kind of black spots on them. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
And I never could. Did they just dye those black spots?
I can't imagine what animal would yield that fur.
I always thought it looked really cool.
I think it's just like the coloring. Like it's almost like the end of the hair, right? Is that what you're talking about? So not all of them have it.
Right.
Like it's almost like a discoloration.
Yeah, they're black spots.
Yeah.
Essentially, is what they look
like. Like a Dalmatian.
Yeah, kind of like that.
Oh.
Smaller. They're wearing Dalmatian fur.
Oh, my God.
We'll no longer be wearing Dalmatians.
You'd have to see. I'll have to show you.
Somebody gave me a real fur coat. It is absolutely beautiful. And it does I don't know if it's exactly what you're talking about, but it does have a little bit of discoloration on it. But I have never once worn it.
Yeah.
Honestly, Kathy.
It's not really all that comfortable. It's kind of itchy.
You feel sort of bad, A, but B. They're apparently a nightmare to pay to get cleaned. They have to be cleaned in a special way. It's too much.
Some of that expensive stuff, like I've told you, cashmere. I somebody got me that. I wore one time. I'm like, it's 1,000 degrees
so
in this
hot.
Thing.
And Preston, it can be super thin.
All right, so we're looking at a picture. That's what I'm talking about with those black spots. I always thought those were pretty cool.
Do you black spots?
Yes.
The announcement thrilled animal welfare activists who have previously called out the queen for sporting fur on ceremonial robes, coats, hats throughout the years. The Humane Society said our head of state going fur-free sends a powerful message that fur is firmly out of fashion and does not belong with brand Britain. As for Kate Middleton, the Duchess of Cambridge, is known to occasionally wear fur, but is said to ensure that it is ethically sourced.
Did they suspend, I don't even know if they do them anymore, but ceremonial fox hunting?
You know what? I think they don't kill the foxes anymore.
They rehabilitate them.
Something like that. I don't know.
So,
it may exist in some circles, though.
The black spots, Preston, are from an animal called an ermine, which is like a weasel, and they make the furs out of them. They have black spots on them.
No kidding.
Yeah, so it's a specific type of animal that makes those really fancy furs, and it's they're bred for that purpose.
I didn't know that. So that fur color configuration is an authentic fur found on a particular animal.
Yeah.
The Robert Irvine, you said.
No, ermine.
Oh, okay.
It looks like like a mink or something like that. Nick pulled up a picture of the animal.
So when they say a mink stole, what does the stole refer to?
I think a stole is just another way of referring to a fur, but it's a shorter. Isn't the stole like over the shoulders, not an entire coat?
Do you know what I've always found sort of jarring? And my aunt had one.
The dead animal?
Yeah.
The whole animal?
Yeah.
The mink stole that had the face and head on it.
Yeah, when are we going on the mastodon hunt?
Yep, exactly. And it's like in, we were talking about Coming to America yesterday. King Joffrey has a full lion head as his cape. It's pretty weird seeing that. All right, so anyhow, Meghan Markle, meanwhile, reportedly has a strict no-fur policy and eschews the look in favor of sustainable design featuring faux fur.
However, she refuses to give up her pig roast.
Hey, this is interesting. A Hollywood film company, I'm sure you saw this, Steve, plans to resurrect iconic actor James Dean and cast him in a new movie via special effects technology. Magic City Films announced Wednesday that it has obtained the rights from Dean's family to cast him posthumously in a secondary lead role in a Vietnam-era action drama called Finding Jack.
See, I heard it was going to be The Tooth Fairy 2.
No. The movie, based on a novel of the same name by Gareth Crocker, will tell the true story about the abandonment of thousands of canine units as surplus military equipment after the end of the Vietnam War. And the adventure that ensues when a smitten soldier refuses to leave his best friend behind.
This is
a dog movie.
This is so okay. So will he appear as James Dean within the movie or as James Dean? James Dean would be
you know what
right at the earliest days of the Vietnam conflict.
Yeah.
We wouldn't even be in. He died in what, 65?
Yes. So that's an interesting question,
or
Steve.
Is he actually playing a character?
Is what I thought. But you know what? Of that time, maybe. Well,
he would. I think he would have been too early.
Yeah, he died in 56.
Oh, I'm sorry. Wow.
Yeah, so it would have been too early.
65. Okay.
All right. So casting of live actors for the film is underway. Dean, born in Indiana in 1931, lived fast, died young. He was 24. Made a big impression in Hollywood. He only had 3 film roles.
Let me see if I can.
Yeah, go ahead.
Rebel Without a Cause, mm-hmm. Giant, and East of Eden.
That is correct. And so Rebel Without a Cause and East of Eden both came out in 1955, and then Giant was released in 1956 after his death. So he made that big of an impression in that short of time.
So he rocked the method acting community. He was a Lee Strasberg student, I believe. And so he was of that Montgomery Clift, Marlon Brando school that kind of set acting on its ear.
Yeah.
And that's where the legend was born. I'll be curious, though, Preston, with the ability of these deep fakes. And, you know, like they did the Tron movie where they had Jeff Bridges as a younger version of himself.
Well, and also
Tony Stark.
Nope. It's Star Wars, the one that we really like.
Oh, Rogue One.
Rogue One, yeah. Where they have the general.
Grand Moff Tarkin. Yeah.
No, who's the actor?
Peter Cushing.
Yeah. They redid him, and it was
pretty close.
Pretty flawless. Yeah. So if they can pull that off, they might be. They've probably sharpened their skills since then.
Yeah. It's sort of a split feeling about this because, for example, you take like the Irishman where they have, you know, Pacino and De Niro, and they're de-aging them. But what about actors they could get to play those roles? I mean, how long are they going to wring the acting out of current actors and sort of block new actors from getting those roles?
And now dead actors.
Dead actors. Imagine you go up for a role and you're beaten by a dead actor.
So the film's producer, Anton Ernst, noted in a statement that Dean's family considers Finding Jack to be Dean's 4th film role. They said, we searched high and low for the perfect character to portray the role of Rogan,
Joe Rogan,
which has some extreme complex character arcs. And after months of research, we decided on James Dean. Ernst said, we feel very honored that his family supports us and will take every precaution to ensure that his legacy as one of the most epic film stars to date is kept firmly intact.
I think all this stuff is really cool. I think at the end of the day, though, at this point, like people don't, if the movie stinks, none of the technology is going to matter.
No, yeah, you're right.
So, like, if the story's no good and the acting's no good, it doesn't matter if James Dean is in a new movie because people will find the novelty of that fleeting and then just go right past it.
Now, they will have to pay an actor to voice it, I would imagine. So somebody will get paid for part of that role, but not nearly what an actor using all of their skills would.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. It's a weird new age we live in.
Yep, absolutely. This is pretty cool. In addition to wrestler and actor, we can add philanthropist to John Cena's resume with over 600 Make-A-Wish requests granted. He has granted more wishes than any celebrity in history.
I didn't know that.
In a recent interview.
And we talk all the time.
With People magazine, Cena recalled the first day he met one wisher, a young fan of WWE. He says, I said, if you ever need me for this ever, I don't care what I'm doing. I don't care what I'm doing. I will drop what I'm doing. And I will be involved because I think that is the coolest thing. Cena also gets the most requests at Make-A-Wish. Other stars don't usually pass 300. But Make-A-Wish isn't the only charity that he supports. He recently donated $500,000 to the Los Angeles Fire Department Foundation for the fires that are taking place. And he's obviously has that picture playing with fire where he's a fireman in it. But over 600 Make-A-Wish request.
That's pretty amazing.
It's amazing.
I've done some work with Make-A-Wish over the last 2 years, and he is just, as you would imagine, revered in their offices. They talk about him as if he were almost like a god. He never says no.
Yeah, that's awesome. Alejandra Silva, the wife of actor Richard Gere, is pregnant with the couple's second child.
And did you see the turnaround on this?
No.
So they had a kid 8 months ago.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So this is.
Oh, yeah. It says they welcomed a baby boy in February.
Yeah.
And this one's expected to arrive in the spring. Wow. They got to
bam.
Yeah.
We talked about this yesterday. This
is trash, but I mean, this is more of the story. Yeah.
Okay.
Both Gear and Silva have one other child from their previous marriages, but together they are parents to the baby boy that they welcomed in February, and they got another one coming again.
How long are you supposed to wait before you are permitted to get it on after the birth of a baby?
Depends on the woman.
You heard of Irish twins, though, right?
Yes,
yeah.
I have.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not that long. I mean, as far as the doctor's
what do they suggest?
Recommendations?
For
repair work and all that?
So let the Army Corps of Engineers come in and patch that
up. I think a lot goes on down there. It depends on if you push the baby out or,
if the crew works through the night.
If there was some stitching and things like that. I think it all depends.
They probably give you a suggested time frame, but then say whenever you're feeling up for it.
On the way to the car.
Okay, John Stamos.
John Stamos.
Or maybe someone on his team flubbed on Twitter by liking a tweet that references Aunt Becky going to jail.
John Stamos.
The tweet praises Stamos' performance in The Little Mermaid, but not without prefacing it with an Aunt Becky dig as well.
Good
Aunt
housekeeping.
Aunt Becky dig. I said Aunt Becky.
Yeah, because of Beggy Dick.
Hey, the dick, you know?
And Beggy Dick.
A Beggy Dick.
I did that twice.
He had to get out of porn because he had a Beggy. Yeah. It's a gray area.
No.
Chuck and Bill aren't here today, I don't think, either.
Well, if you make it one word, it's totally fine.
Yeah, it's not.
So, CMZ reached out to Stamos's team, but no word as of yet on that. Hayden Panettiere is back with her ex, Brian Hickerson.
She's not a fighter, is it?
No, that was Klitschko.
Yeah.
I don't know who this guy is. But they had separated, remember? They were seen walking together through an airport together. 1 month ago, a felony domestic violence charge against him was dismissed, citing failure to secure a material witness. Sources say that Panettiere's family still don't approve of their relationship.
She had severe postpartum depression. Do you remember that a while ago?
Yeah.
And I thought when Heroes, that show came out, I thought she was poised to be the next big thing.
Yeah.
And then there seemed to be a lot of stop-start things going on with her career.
She did pretty well in Nashville.
She did, yeah.
And that show
she had to leave the show because of the postpartum depression.
Did?
Yeah.
Okay.
Her daughter lives with Klitschko in Ukraine.
No kidding.
Yeah, so Klitschko is 43. They share a daughter, Kaya, who is only 4, and she lives abroad without her mother.
God, he is gigantic, and she is teeny tiny.
Unbelievable. It was so wild to see them together. Shay Mitchell, who is from Pretty Little Liars, recently turned to Instagram. She revealed the unique name of her daughter in the first pictures.
Can I guess?
Yeah. No. That hasn't caught on yet. But it was a heartfelt post of her holding her new baby, and she has named the baby Atlas. She goes on to say that she will always be her biggest fan. So Atlas is a baby girl, I guess.
When I hear Atlas, I would assume a guy.
I would too. Yeah,
since Atlas in legend was a guy,
and Charles Atlas.
I think of too. You know, he asked you to gamble a stamp to not get sand kicked in your face on the beach.
That's right, and that she is already so proud to be. Her mama. So Atlas
there you go.
Is the name of the baby. Let's see. From the mind of James Corden comes a new television show set to air on CBS. The show is called Game On. I have very little details of this, but it is a combination of comedy and sports. It's a game show, and it's hosted by comedian and actor Keegan-Michael Key.
Well, he's good.
Yeah, he's pretty great.
There's a whole bunch of shows that I actually have lost track of, game shows that are hosted by celebrities with careers. Go ahead.
I was going to say, Casey, wasn't Keegan-Michael Key the host of Jeopardy? Or, I mean,
It's Always Sunny. Sunny.
Yeah.
When Dee Case. Top, Dee breaks top the five episodes?
Oh, no doubt.
Top five episodes
of
all time.
It was so funny.
And then, let's see, just one other story, and that's it. And very little detail on this. Ben Affleck has been cast as the star in Robert Rodriguez's new action thriller called Hypnotic.
Oh, cool.
He'll be playing
Batman?
No.
Damn it.
A detective whose daughter goes missing. The big budget film is also set to begin production in April.
And The Accountant 2 is coming out soon.
Seriously?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's fantastic.
That movie came out of the blue.
I liked it.
I had no idea what I was getting into, and I really enjoyed it.
All right. We're ready for clips now. Well, here's your Batman, Steve. 3 years after Batman disappears, Kate Kane must become the symbol of hope for Gotham City and Batwoman. In this clip, Ruby Rose talks about playing the best superhero she can. Here we go.
That's the most exhausting. That's the most, like, emotionally, physically, spiritually exhausting part to play, is taking on board all of that, knowing her story, living her story, trying to find the truth and the essence in her story, and depict it in a way that, you know, is as authentic as it can be.
Where's she from?
She's from Australia, okay. I believe.
A lot like our new digital guy.
Oh, my God. And I saw Bill Weston in the hallway yesterday after his lunch, and he was like, are you guys going to mention that on the air?
Yes, yeah, we are. Yeah, we should. Nobody knows what we're talking about right now.
We met our new director of digital for Beasley, the entire company that we work for. This guy is running the entire digital program.
Yeah.
All of our
nice guy.
Websites, social media, all this stuff. Met him. Very nice guy. And we're talking for like 15 minutes or so, conversation back and forth with him. And Bill, out of nowhere, goes, so where are you from? You're from Australia? And we all look at each other going, what? What did
I mean?
He's like, well, I detect a little bit of an accent. And the rest of the room, the other 10 people in the room were like, there's no accent.
Not a scintilla. He is completely bereft. If anything, a neutral Midwestern type of accent.
He's from Utah.
There you go. So I go to him, you know, I say, so is it tough being a woman with a beard?
Oh, my God.
And Bill's and like, and so, we would.
At the end, he's like, me and Chuck are going to take out to lunch. I go, you guys going out next day?
But then
the whole rest g'day.
We just wouldn't let it go. Bill was so embarrassed. And I understand this. He tried to, like, pass it off as if it was a joke. No, I meant to say that. It was just so outlandish, you know. It was like it was like asking if he was from Mars or something, you know. He was so
like, what
embarrassed.
Is he here? What is was, he hearing?
But that's the beauty of Bill. What makes him a top level program director. Also, it makes him ask people
how is
completely
that
devoid of Australian accents.
I don't like, see the connection. See how they're not related.
But like Bill was kind of like running the meeting, and it was like so commanding. Like no one was speaking at the time, and he just went for it. And we all looked at him like it was nuts.
Yep. It was a pretty awesome moment.
It was a great moment.
Batwoman, which stars Ruby Rose, who is from Australia, airs on Sundays at 8 p.m. on the CW.
Quick little thing, if I may. You had said about when I think Ruby Rose is pretty dynamic in John Wick 2. In this, though, Preston, as Batwoman, when you see her get into fights, she's so small.
Yeah.
That you're like...
Really kind of hard to buy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You really, dude, you having a tough time with this one?
Yeah. All right, well, let's do the next clip. Here we go. And last Christmas, Kate's life takes an interesting turn after she takes a job at a department store for the holidays. And here, director Paul Feig explains his unexpected first impression of the film's star, Emilia Clarke.
I sat with Emilia. You know, it was like 4 years ago. I'm a big Game of Thrones fan. She just done something on Broadway and got these amazing reviews. So I was like, I have to meet her. And she was in town. So she came to my office and we had this like 1 hour meeting and she was funny.
Sorry.
No, it's my fault.
I was late on your cue. Last Christmas hits theaters tomorrow.
So this seems to be a comedy, but with a romantic and serious and side to it, because she's obviously sick, and that's what Last Christmas is about.
So I get a Hallmark vibe from this.
I do.
I see the trailer. So,
but he's done great comedy work. So
yeah.
We'll see what it is.
Last Christmas hits theaters tomorrow. So there you go. And that's your entertainment report for the day. Let's take a break, shall we? We are gonna come back in just a moment. Am I giving these away?
Yeah, man.
All right, you know what? I'm going to give away a 4-pack of tickets to join us for the Happy Place.
Hey!
Next Thursday, 1 week from today, King of Prussia Mall. We, the Preston and Steve Show, will be there for Preston and Steve Night, 6 to 8 p.m. If you would like to go, give us a call right now. We'll take caller number 15 at 215-263-WMMR. It's called the most Instagrammable pop-up in America. Tickets are on sale now via happyplace.me. It's here through January 5th, occupying the space where JCPenney was inside the mall. So caller number 15, a 4-pack of tickets. We'll be back in just a moment. Make sure you stay with us.
Ladies and gentlemen, your attention, please.
Acme Market.
Kids proudly supports Preston and Steve's Camp Out for Hunger, beginning Monday, December 2nd at Xfinity Live in the Wells Fargo Center complex. If scheduling prevents you from attending in person, you can still make a difference. Stop by your local Acme throughout November and make a donation at the register. Just look for the Camp Out can when you go. Your donation goes towards foods that Phil Abundance needs most to help area families. Go to WMMR.com/campout. For complete details and a list of especially needed food items. Acme Markets and 93.3 WMMR, putting Philly first.
Hey, there's a new Daily Rush video for you to check out. The title of it is F Hunger in the Butt.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, that's our new slogan for
and,
Camp Out.
Yep, it says Camp Out has a new slogan, F Hunger in the Butt. And you can watch it now at PrestonSteve.com, sponsored by Punchline Philly Comedy Club, Restaurant, and Bar. And speaking of the butt, can I do a shout out real quick?
All good to go.
This is, hey, bitches, Gadzook, sorry to bother you at work. my name is Greg Gonzalez, and I'm a diehard listener and podcaster from the Central Coast of California.
Ooh.
And I was hoping to get a shout.
Aloha.
I was hoping to get a shout out slash butthole for my brother, who is helping fight the Kincaid fire. I told him about the five-day challenge, and he's been listening for several years now.
Wow.
A shout-out for him and Crew 29 would make his day. It would totes make his day.
Totes for goats.
And if and when you get the crew to broadcast from California, how do I get getting tickets for that? Thank you in advance from Greg. So if you give the shart, we'll do the
I'll do the shart. Yes. Good to go. All right. Here we go.
So there you go, man. Good luck in fighting the fire. We appreciate that, Greg, for checking in. Hope your brother's going to be safe.
I am so impressed that I remembered this name. I got to do a shout out real quick before I forget. I met somebody who last night whose cousin listens every single morning. Huge fan. She works in King of Prussia. Her name is Jackie Buechler. Yeah,
Jackie Buechler.
Jackie Buechler. There you go. Here's your shout out. Thank you for listening.
Here's another quick one. Longtime listener, currently listening to all of the Preston and Steve podcasts on my train to work every day. I'd love to get a shout out to my amazing husband, Grant. I've transformed him into an avid Preston and Steve listener, and he absolutely loves your show. Our 7-year anniversary is October 27th, so I missed it by that much. And I think he'll get a kick out of having his own personal shout out. Grant, I love you, and I'm so happy to be your wifey, she says. Thanks, you guys, and keep being funny. That is from Kim Rounds. So she got her hubby to listen. I love hearing that.
Honestly, that's great because you always ask, just take the challenge, the 5-day challenge, and if you don't like it, that's fine. But you might find something that you do like.
And then one last one. My hubby and I are longtime listeners. Moved to the state with tax-free coyotes years ago, so we podcast every day. I want to give this first-time daddy the biggest, juiciest shout out. As we find out the sex of our first baby on October 30th, it was a total surprise getting pregnant. Difficult. And we lost two angel babies in the 9 years we've been together. We also celebrate our fourth wedding anniversary on Halloween, so it's the biggest anniversary present I can give him. Thanks again, Presbo and the crew. And I'm sorry to bother you all at work. Thanks from Christina Gallagher. So here you go. And speaking of Presbo, I got this email from Jason yesterday. I think he goes, hey, man, I was done with the, and his subject line was Presbo, welcome to the Bo Club. Says, I was donned the nickname J-Bo back in college, and it has stuck with all my friends. They all call me J-Bo, so welcome to the club.
I think Presbo is here to stay.
It has stuck.
Yeah, and so, the father of that, Pierre Robert.
Pierre Robert came up with the very first Presbo. Okay, Presbo.
J-Bo.
Whatever,
what is not to go off on a tangent here, but I've heard the Bo thing attached many times.
Yeah.
And what is the, is it
Rambo?
Is there a derivation of it?
Well, Jimbo.
Jimbo?
Has always been an old
time. We had a Lebo. Lieberman. We called him Lebo.
Yeah. One of my best friends is Jeff Lieberman. Lebo.
You call him Lebo?
We call him Lebo.
Okay.
Yeah. It's just, some things just lend to it, I guess.
Diane Bo.
But Jimbo.
That's what I call my wife.
Jimbo was always.
The go to Jimbo.
Hey Jimbo.
Hey Jimbo.
Yeah. So
Presbo is great.
I don't know. Who knows? Hey, I saw this very interesting article, and I'm curious about you guys here on the show and people listening as well. It was a survey of over 2,000 Americans, and they found that 74% of respondents had or currently have a role model, and for those who do, the average person has 4. Role models.
Ooh. Wow.
Yeah.
4 role models per person.
And results revealed that intelligence, Leadership skills and confidence in their abilities are the top three characteristics we admire in those that we look up to.
Well,
and I've got some breakdowns of this that I'll get to in a moment.
But I can tell you that I have a foot model, and that's you.
That's a
I draw inspiration.
I'm a foot model. I'm not a role model. You know, and I was doing a little.
Could you come up with any
soul searching? And I can't say definitively, that's my role model.
No, I've heard people say it and say it in all earnestness that they have somebody and they can pinpoint a person. I think having four people is, I'm trying to come up with one.
I feel kind of empty because of that fact.
I think disagree. People, I bet you do.
People can influence us.
Yeah.
But when I think about a role model, I think I'm going to be like that person. I'm going to do what they're doing.
No, I think it's if it's up to four, Steve. I think it's
a little
people
bit
that,
more.
Well, no, I think it's things that you adopt from people that you like. I think Dr. Mike is a role model for you.
I think it goes back to, can you think of anybody in your life at all? Like, even when you were younger, I don't think it necessarily has to be right now in your life.
Yeah, because there are certainly people that I admire. And that's a different story. I think
that's a
role model.
I agree.
You know what I mean?
I agree 100%. A role model I've thought of, wow. You know, you and Casey were talking about someone. What are the attributes of a classic role model as defined by this?
I can give you one for a while there where I was like, man, that guy's cool. He's got it together. I'd like to be like him. And that was our former general manager, John Fulham here.
John Fulham.
Everything about that guy, every bit of confidence, the niceness, his success, his ethics and all that. I'm like, that's a guy I want to be like.
You know who you did those? I'll tell you someone who you did consider a role model. Hmm. You talked about a broadcaster. I think you would consider this person a role model in St. Louis.
Yeah,
who had a role model as far as your career.
Yeah, Rich Dalton.
Right, and then that became Pierre here, you said.
Yeah.
Right?
And then I got to know him.
Yeah. No. And then he called you Presbo.
Then he called me Presbo.
Well, getting to know somebody like that it presents problems because you realize that they're not infallible.
Right.
You know, and so nobody is.
With Pierre, though, getting to know him more, the more it confirms his role model status, the way he conducts his life.
Try working
for
him for 3 years. But, no, I love
but as,
Pierre.
But as what I hear through the speakers, absolutely.
100%.
Most definitely, yes.
So I think it took me a little while to know who my role model was. Like, I didn't know. Growing up, does that make sense? And then I realized, and it might sound,
you do some reflection, and then you can think of
right
it, so, in clearer terms.
And John Fulham is a great example because there are things in my life and my career that I actually took from him, and how he ran the company and how he ran his life, and just anything from professional to even there were some personal things. So I would 100% call him a role model for me. But then the two people that I think had the biggest impact on my life, and it might sound cliche, but my mom and my dad. I took my generosity and the willingness to give back from my mom, and hard work and going to work every day, and that's a way of life, and that's what you have to do for my dad.
Your real mom, Janis Joplin?
Right. No. That's my musical talent.
Okay.
From her.
God.
Yes.
Well, that's number one and two on the list.
Yeah.
Mom and dad on this survey.
But it took
and
me
I feel
little
kind of bad because I'm like, no, my dad's not my role model.
So here's
but
the deal.
But it took me a little while to realize that it was my mom and dad. I didn't know until a little bit later that, okay, I get my work ethic from my dad and I get this, you know, having to give back and always trying to help somebody from my mom.
If those are the parameters of a role model, then my dad and my mother have certainly. My mother passed away when I was 20 one years old. So there was so much I took from her in her approach to life, her ability to compartmentalize and not let everything go crashing down on you. You always hear me say this to people when I'm giving advice, which is, okay, this is bad, but this is good.
Yeah.
And how you can do that. So I always assume, you know, parents are supposed to do that. That's something that
right.
They do. They provide that service. When I think of a role model, I think of someone outside of that.
Understood.
You know, so.
Yeah, but there are not all parents that do that and do a good job.
No,
at that.
Both my parents did a great job.
But that's what I mean. There are some parents that don't. So they wouldn't be considered a role model. But in our cases, ours were.
Yeah, you guys named four good ones. John Fulham, Pierre Robert, Kathy's parents, my parents.
My dad, your role model, I would imagine.
Your dad for sure. Honestly, around here at work, I look up to Chuck D'Amico quite a bit. His approach in
talking to people and treating people really well and listening and
getting both sides of whatever issue there is.
Chuck is a great mediator and does it in such a calm and impressive manner that I look up to that. I would definitely call Chuck a role model.
He said, well, there's certainly attributes of people that you admire. So I guess if you're taking like you know, we just gave him crap before, but like, you know, Bill has a way of juggling a whole bunch of things and multitasking that I find, you know, he's very efficient when it comes to all these things, programming two stations, doing all that stuff. So I think that's impressive. So like if you were to talk about Preston, who's just a comprehensive, that's a person I'm going to model my life after. That's what I think of a really...
Yeah, that's kind of always been my interpretation of a role model. But let me roll out some of these stats here for you. So it was conducted by one poll on behalf of the University of Phoenix. The survey found that dad is most likely to exemplify the traits. And the traits they were looking for: intelligence, leadership skills, and confidence in their abilities. Those are the top three characteristics that we admire. So intelligence, leadership, and confidence. And that's kind of what I saw in Fulham.
So my dad is that, because my dad always is always learning. He's I'm so proud of his service in World War II and all of the things. He has his foibles, we all do, and there are things that you know. But the things that he has told me throughout my life, he has given me some very valid wisdom that I employ and pass on to other people. So I guess then, yes, as a role model, my dad.
Well, and Preston, but even for you, you said maybe not your parents, but you always say that your dad taught you to do something that you love. I mean, your entire career.
It's the best piece of advice I've ever gotten.
So not maybe not necessarily a role model, but good advice.
Yeah, because role model, I've always looked at interpreting that as pattern my life after.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
And we have completely different interests. I mean, I love them to death, obviously, both my mom and dad. But I have a different path that I walk than they did.
I guess it's all the way we take it. But whatever you define, you know, and here they're giving you sort of an example. But I always thought like career wise and all that stuff. I'm finding it hard outside of just saying the go to, which would be, you know, my dad definitely, my mother for the brief, you know, time that I knew her. Yeah, was definitely that. But This is a tough one, and then people would have four of them.
I have different role models for like parenting. Like one of my best friends, Will, I admire his parenting skills. Casey is another one that I admire as far as advice that I've heard him tell me secondhand that he's given his kids. I'm like, that's good stuff.
Fart into the chair.
Yeah. So. Dad was chosen as top. 47 respondents said that that's their role model. Mom was close second at 42%, followed by, and here we go, we get out of the family now, a teacher or professor, a favorite teacher or professor.
Oh, yeah.
41% said
for
that.
Sure. I mean, and I can recite the top five most influential teachers and professors in my life.
Yeah, me too.
The survey looked at more than just who our role models are. It also delved into the influence that they have on our lives. Let me get to that in a second. I'll give you the rest of the list here. So number three was teacher or professor. Four is a celebrity, an actor, or an athlete of somebody who has, in your eyes, done great things.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of...
Rerun.
Well, dancing skills. Yeah. But I think a lot of celebrities / athletes have begun to reject the notion of them being role models.
Well, only the bad ones.
Well, but I think
not that a role model.
That lady, I ain't an athlete. You know, I don't want to be a role. Charles Barkley said he's not a role model, and I think that part of the reason for that is that people looked up to them automatically because of their stature.
Number five is a coach or other instructor. I think that could fall under teacher, but
I agree.
Coach or other instructor, and it says arts, music, etc. Number six is a historical figure. I could see that. Somebody very successful in whatever it may be. Newton, exactly.
Isaac Newton.
Seven is a manager or boss. And there's that's the John Fulham thing that was lying there for me. Number eight, a pastor or youth leader.
Mm. That's me.
Yes, of course. You're
I'm sorry. Brother.
I have that Lutheran retreat that I run.
And you're the Universal Life Church.
Yes.
Number nine is a family friend. And number 10 is just a friend. So those are the people That would be a part of the role model categories of the top 10.
I would say that over my life, I've drawn influences from people, and there are things that I've admired about people that I have tried to incorporate into my life, into my fantasy life.
Jennifer Garner, Ben
Jennifer
Affleck.
Jennifer Garner, the pool boy, Ben Affleck.
Well,
right.
So this also delved into the influence that that role models have on our lives. So the vast majority of those with a role model, 81%, say their role model has influenced some of the major life decisions they've made. This includes advice on overcoming obstacles, setting financial goals, helping respondents choose a career path, and encouraging them to finish their degree. 55% of those with a role model said the person that they look up to motivated them to pursue higher education. And when things got tough and they wanted to quit, 55% that their role model encouraged them to continue their schooling. And 86% said their role model encouraged them to be a lifelong learner. So it had a lot to do with education.
I've always considered, you know, I look at the people that I've encountered throughout my life as sort of a Whitman sampler. And I'm going to take that. I like that. I like the way this approach. And that sort of makes an amalgamation. And I hopefully am a reflection of all those people.
Yeah, there's inspirational aspects to like a lot of people in my life where you take little things from each person. Yeah, that's a good point.
Like Gary Lauer's loyalty.
Right.
He never wavers.
And his jam.
Yeah. Well, who doesn't love his jam? God. And his three testicles.
His three testicles.
Right. I mean, that's
when he gave that inspirational speech at Villanova.
Yeah.
I had three testicles.
I had chills. Let me go to some calls here. 215-263-WMMR. It's Andrew on the line. Hey, Andrew, good morning.
Morning, bitches. Hey, what? How you doing?
He did both. Get it yourself.
We're tired.
All right, Andrew.
I'm stuck in traffic on 422, Kathy, so there you go.
All right. Yeah. Okay.
Who's your role model, Andrew?
When I was younger, it was Reggie White because he's such a strong Christian and a leader in the locker room and a leader off the field. Now it's Brian Dawkins. He obviously, when he was traded from Philadelphia to Denver, there was a lot of tension, and he came back and he buried the hatchet and he forgave the organization. And he really turned his life around and really, you know, showed that, you know, with the relationship he has with Christ and everything. And even with Carson Wentz, I mean, those leaders, there's so much Christianity in the NFL, and you just don't hear about it. But when you do hear about it, it's really great to hear that message from those leaders. So I think just the people, Brian Dawkins, Reggie White, Carson Wentz, talk about their faith. I think that's really hits me, probably a lot of your listeners as well. But, you know, just the obstacles they overcome. And when they're down, they just, you know, they look to Christ and they look to God, and they, you know, it brings them up and it brings everybody up and it gives up the message.
Andrew, so in this case, so, okay, so in the case of this, that they inspire you. And I guess, Preston, going back to the conversation and our vagueness on this, is that when I think of a role model, I think of a comprehensive, full.
Yeah.
I'm going to do all that they're doing, everything that, you know what I'm saying? And I guess that's my stumbling block here, because like with Andrew, he's connecting to their altruism and their spirituality.
Mm-hmm. And what I find interesting about, you know, a couple of those examples that he brought up is people like Carson Wentz or Brian Dawkins or, you know, any of these guys, they're not heavy handed with their religion and their Christianity. Like, you know, it's part of who they are. They're not going door to door saying, you know, turn your life over to Christ or anything like that. But as a result, people notice that. And somebody like Zach Ertz, he noticed that Carson didn't turn him. And he said there is a calmness about him that he has that I want, that I want to adopt into my life. So he sort of changed. Zach Ertz wasn't like a heavy duty Christian or anything like that.
To that point, what you're saying is you lead people. I agree with you, Case, that I tend to respond to people who lead by example and don't beat you over the head with something.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Let me go next to Hank. Hi, Hank. Good morning.
Hey, Lauer, play MMR.
Oh!
Oh, my God, that's awesome.
Hey, Lauer, I forgot.
Play MMR!
He's our digital assistant.
I gotta do that. I have to do that. If it didn't take so long to record last year's Christmas special
Took forever.
but I'll get that for this Christmas so that everyone can have a Lauer assistant under the tree.
All right, Hank, your role model.
Uh,
okay, when I was younger, when I was a kid, it was Cal Ripken Jr. Just the way he played baseball, the way he was in the locker room, the way he came to work every day of his life and never missed a game and just powered through. But then as I got older, I realized that it was my grandfather. I lost my dad when I was 8 years old, and I lost my grandfather too this year. He was 9 years old, and he was just the most amazing guy you'd ever want to meet. He could always make you smile, no matter what kind of a day you were having. He was very charismatic, and he knew you'd walk into a restaurant with him when we were younger, and he knew every person's name in the restaurant and who you were and, you know, where you were. He asked about your family and was just, the greatest guy. I mean, you wouldn't, I don't know, you couldn't have met a better guy. He worked for 40 years of his life in a steel mill and then lived in retirement for 25 years because he worked so hard and never had to, you know, go hand out stickers at Walmart. Not
right.
Knocking that, but he just never had to take another job when he was older.
So what have you done with that influence?
I
sell drugs.
No.
But he's the best.
No, but he clearly has impacted you. And I mean, you know, I think, and it sounds like you're a reflection of him, Frank. So you honor him by doing that.
It's Hank, but that's okay. But I really appreciate that. It is really something that I really try to model my life after, because if I can make somebody smile throughout the day, if I can put a smile on someone's face who's having a bad day, like that's just, I'm very personable, and that was the way my grandfather was, and it all the way down to his last day when he was laying in the bed. I'll never forget. I was crying, and just realizing that it was coming to an end. And he looks at me. He goes, "What the hell's wrong with him?"
Nice. Yeah, no, that's so obviously that's what I think I'm looking for when I, like, so in that case,
thanks, Hank.
My mom and my dad would in the way they both made me what I am, that I would consider them then role models on that level.
Okay.
Somebody texted in a good question, which was, where does the line fall between role model and mentor?
Yeah.
I don't quite know what the answer
is. That's
a
good question, because when it comes to mentors, I have a number of people who, and if you talk about people that we've met throughout radio and that, people can be a removed mentor, not even... They don't even know they're being your mentor, but you're following their example.
Right, but I think a mentor can be a role model for you.
I always thought mentors were more hands-on.
I thought they were breath mints.
No, that's Mentos.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I always thought a mentor was somebody that like you were kind of an apprentice to. You know what I mean?
You can be assigned a mentor in some lines
maybe
of work,
that's
you know?
Why.
And so like, you can have somebody who's almost like a big brother or big sister in your line of work or at school or whatever.
But nobody assigned you a role model.
Right.
Right. It's someone you've just... kind of taken on.
Think about that, guys.
Well, I think honestly there should be an industry.
I am Casey Boy.
Professional role model?
I've opened up the first professional role model institute.
The PRI.
No, wait, no. You charge?
PRMI.
PRMI.
Yeah.
The Primi.
Yeah.
I think about people that, for lack of better words, that I brag about as if it's myself. And as potential role models, and Nick, you had mentioned Chuck D'Amico. I sometimes because he's got this like this drive about him and this like inherent honesty about him that like I am super jealous of. I try to, and I don't live up to those standards, but like, you know,
that's why you hardly ever have lunch with him, right?
Well, he doesn't like to have lunch with me anymore.
I know.
Yeah. He likes to have lunch with Steve Myers now.
What? Oh, when did that happen?
Trouble in paradise.
Yeah. Steve Myers is a Steelers fan, by the way.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
Is he really?
Yeah. And then he went out to lunch with some Australian guy yesterday.
Who wouldn't want to listen to that accent all afternoon?
You would have. Okay.
Yeah.
I know. G'day.
But like what? Chuck D'Amico, I wish he were me.
I wish
sitting across the table from him.
To understand how
awesome he is.
He does. I agree.
I don't know how to love him.
No, I know what you mean. His attention to detail, his creativity is impressive, and it's and I think that he doesn't understand how awesome he is. It'd be
if
cool
only
if he did.
Could see him through our eyes.
Looking through the eyes of love.
Wait a minute, he's not working today either, is he?
No, I think tomorrow. show he's tomorrow.
No, he's, Bill isn't tomorrow. Either. Yeah,
he's in his office crying right now because he doesn't think he lives up to our standards.
No, he's
you do, Chuck.
He's listening to Ben.
Yeah. You.
let me go through.
I'll get some other calls in a moment. Let me go through some more of these stats. The top ways. So that they are exhibiting the traits of a role model include making a difference in their local community, following their moral and ethical convictions, and that was followed by working to achieve their personal goals, as well as continuous learning and upskilling. 78% of respondents believe that lifelong learning is important, and the top reason that they believe that is because it allows them to be a positive role model for those around them. So they want to kind of spread the love.
You want to spread it out. Yeah, I got it.
But here's the best.
Like Miracle Whip.
Best given advice by role models. Okay?
Okay.
Never give in to critics. Always be proud of who you are. Be yourself and love yourself.
I do.
There will never be a shortcut to success.
Yeah.
Fight for your dreams. Be loyal and honest. Readers are leaders. Set goals and follow them. You are a product of what you think of yourself. Facing obstacles makes you stronger. Believe in yourself. There's a lot of stuff here.
Steal often.
Always save for tomorrow. Education is the best legacy. Two more things. We are built to learn and never give up on your dreams. So these are the...
Do you have it from how hard you get hit and get up?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
That's very inspirational. Yeah. It's not how hard you hit, it's how hard you get
everything
hit.
I learned at Casey Foster's Role Models.
The Institute?
It's a gym.
Yeah.
The Role Model Gym.
Why did I send you the Casey Foster's Role Model Gym?
Hang we on. That's the wrong motivational speech. That's the motivational
that's
speech.
From Stop or My Mom Will Shoot?
No, this is from Rocky IV.
Oh, yeah. Not as good.
You know.
Here it is. Here it is.
Somewhere along the line.
Oh, my
God.
It's changed. Why is it sped up?
Because
somewhere along the line, it changed.
What's wrong, Dad?
There's nothing wrong.
You sound different.
What are you saying?
I'm saying your voice sounds higher than it normally.
Don't pay attention to that.
I pitched it up for some reason back in February.
Put down the balloon, Dad.
Somewhere along the line, you changed. You stopped being you. You let people stick a finger in your face and tell you you're no good. And when things got hard, you started looking for something to blame, like a big shadow. Let me tell you something you already know. The world ain't all sunshine and rainbows. It's a very mean and nasty place, and I don't care how tough you are, it will beat you to your knees and keep you there permanently if you let it. You, me, or nobody is going to hit as hard as life. But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward, how much you can take and keep moving forward. That's how winning is done. Now, if you know what you're worth, then go out and get what you're worth. But you got to be willing to take the hits and not pointing fingers saying you ain't where you want to be because of him or her or anybody. Cowards do that, and that ain't you. You're better than that. I'm always going to love you no matter what. No matter what happens. You're my son. You're my blood. You're the best thing in my life. But until you start believing in yourself, you ain't gonna have a life.
That's a great speech.
Yeah. Dad, you forgot to put your pants on. Oh, jeez.
Do you remember we spoke to Milo, the actor who plays his son in that, and he said that speech came about, it was just him and Stallone were talking about boxing, and he realized what he was saying had a metaphor for life. Sly was just saying this stuff. He's like, it's not really about how hard you hit. It's how hard you get hit and keep up and keep going. He's like, wait, this is good stuff. I got to write this down.
Yeah.
And he turned it into a speech. You know?
It's great. It's great.
It is great.
One thing that I haven't brought up that I want to bring up is that my children are my role models because they are so pure of heart, and I have said things to them when they go, Dad, that's not nice. And I'm like, you know, you're right.
Damn it, kid, you're right.
You're absolutely right.
But I pay the bills.
Yeah. Hang on. Intern Jeremy is on the line. Intern Jeremy. Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Hey, and you may know Jeremy from the spelling bee that we've done with him.
He works for Scripps.
On many occasions. But
S-K-R-I-P-T-S.
He's all of our go-to Mac.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. I like frantically call him, text him, email him at any moment.
And he's so...
I'm just thinking of you.
He's so damn calm when you've got all these problems going. Yeah, all right, let me take a look at this.
Well, I mean, they're not my problems.
All right, wait a minute. One of us is a role model to you?
Yeah, so, you know, I have role models for different jobs, but one that's always, I think about quite a bit, actually, especially now, is one of you guys for when I worked there. Do you want to take a guess at it, or should I just throw it out there?
I think it's
Marissa.
Yeah.
Hands down, Marissa.
Hey!
Yeah.
So, when I first started there, it was shortly after you guys came to MMR, and I watched her create a job for herself and find this place in there, and she would mentor me to do the same thing. And one of the biggest things I learned from her was really just seeing a need and filling it, and then you're creating this opportunity for yourself.
No, that's very sage. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, she's like crack. You didn't know you needed it until you tried it. Wow. And then you're like, damn.
It's about how hard you can get hit and get up.
Damn, man.
Marissa, what an analogy.
Crack of our program. Yeah. 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 We need
Marissa.
It. I mean, I need Marissa. Yeah.
God, I need her so bad.
The crack of the Preston and Steve show, and we don't mean ass.
Hey, Jeremy, real quick, how do you spell Marissa?
Oh, that's a one after, man. M-A-R-S-I-A?
Yeah.
S-I-A.
Mercia.
Mercia.
Listen to this.
Mercia. I love you, Marcia.
He knew there was one S.
Marcia.
He just didn't know where.
Ever since I met Marcia.
No, I'm sure she's flattered to hear that. She's nodding up and down and taking off her top. No, she's not.
That's cool, Jeremy. That's awesome. No, I think there's a lot of people who have come through here and seen Marissa as a role model for sure.
She's ridiculous. Yeah. Absolutely ridiculous. Crazy work ethic. Showing up hungover every day.
I know. Not everybody does
that.
No. Thanks, you. It's about powering through, no matter how drunk you are.
Yes. Coming in, your head hurts.
Been drinking like crazy.
You can.
Had concerts all night long.
Yep.
Forget where you live, but you make it to work. Never see your apartment. Never go out to the suburbs.
Thank you, Jeremy. God. Good to talk to you, bud.
Take care, guys.
We need to see when the next Scripps spelling bee is, because we have Jeremy back in.
Yeah.
Before that, and do another spelling bee. All right, let me go to one more call, then we'll wrap it up. And I'm sorry for those who've been on hold for a long time. We got a lot of people on hold, but let me go to Eric. Eric, you're on the air. Good morning.
You guys rock.
Thank you, Eric. Your role model, sir.
I am going to make this real quick. For a project that I've been working on, I have three role models, and it is Preston and Steve, Pierre Robert, and Jim Gardner.
Wow.
So it's four.
It's four. Yeah. But good, all right.
See, yeah. We take a math class.
We count as one.
Preston and Steve is one because you don't say, oh, well, they're on two shows. You know, I mean, you guys are together.
So I hear you. No, I got you. Yeah, and Jim Gardner, I think. So if you were... yeah, in a case where if you want to talk about someone who's conducted their career on a hyper professional level and is revered and respected and continues to be aces at what he does, yeah, that, I can definitely see that. And that's very kind of you to say that about us. In your professional life, is there anybody else you would say is sort of the comprehensive picture of what a role model is for you?
There would be three on that level. My father, my grandfather on my mother's side, and my recently deceased father-in-law.
There you go. Okay.
Those are good ones.
Those are good ones, yeah.
All right. Thanks, Eric. We appreciate it, man.
No problem, guys. You have a good one.
Take care, bud. We'll see you. Wow. Interesting. So, contemplate that today. Think about that. Who's your role model? Why are they your role model? What do you look for them? What do you look to them for? Inspiration and so on. But the top 10 are dad, mom, teacher, professor, a celebrity, either an actor or an athlete, a coach or an instructor, arts, music, etc.
Uber driver.
Historical figures, your manager or boss, pastor or youth leader, a family friend, and number 10 is a friend. So
there you go.
Interesting food for thought.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a break. We'll come back in a second. I got some bizarre file stories, maybe some role models in those that you may have.
Hi, Jerry.
You never know. We'll be back in a moment. Stay with us.
If nothing else, Tool fans are patient. Your wait is nearly over. My 93.3 WMMR is giving away free Tool concert tickets all this weekend. We're also playing the best Tool tracks every hour as we prepare for this month's sold-out show at Wells Fargo Center. We want you to experience the power and mystery of Tool live in concert. So listen and win all weekend long on 93.3 WMMR, everything that rocks.
Let's get to those stories.
Now, Bizarre. WMMR presents Bizarre. Kristen and Steve's Bizarre File.
Brought to you this morning by Robbins Diamonds in tax-free Delaware. Thousands of rings and self-serve cases and absolutely no sales tax in versus the 8% tax in Philly. Robbins Delaware Diamonds. Well, a 46-year-old man had a screwdriver pulled out of his rectum.
Oh. Nearly killed him.
And it was inside of him, and he left it there for a week, apparently. In a disturbing case report, doctors revealed the man suffered a perforated bowel as a result and was left critically ill.
Did they get the broken toaster out of his ass?
He had arrived at a hospital in Florida with life-threatening septic shock because of bacteria which got into his bloodstream through the injury.
Man.
But only when a CAT scan was performed did doctors find the tool responsible, which measured 8.2 inches long by 1.1 inches wide.
Quick question. Phillips head or flathead?
They didn't indicate. After surgery, the unidentified man needed surgery to cut away rotting flesh from inside his area.
Oh, my God.
It's bad enough you have to be in the dude's ass.
It had become infected. He survived and is believed to be the first reported case of this kind. It's not clear which end of the screwdriver was inserted first.
Is he going to go on GMA?
It is only unclear why he inserted the screwdriver in the first place, but he has since needed treatment for psychiatric disorders.
Oh, my
His
God.
Past medical history showed he had suffered with schizophrenia and bipolar disorder and had failed to take medication properly. So that may have contributed, but he was rotting inside.
And, oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. So the human rectum, can accept a lot of stuff. But I think hardware, perhaps, anything you can purchase at Lowe's, you probably want to keep away from.
Yes, and it had perforated his bowel, which easily kill you. A Michigan man was blown through two walls of his house after a cooktop ignited from an apparent propane leak.
Whoa!
The incident occurred when Cody Smith, a conservation officer, was on patrol when he responded to a structure fire. The fire featured multiple explosions and ammunition popping and landing on the nearby roadway.
Jesus Christ.
Smith arrived on the scene, contacted the power company, and called emergency medical services for the injured person. According to the report, the man was attempting to start his cooktop when it ignited from an apparent propane leak in his residence. The impact of the blast blew the resident through two walls of the house. Can't believe he lived. Luckily, the man sustained only minor injuries. Smith collected firearms that survived the blast and put them in safe storage in the sheriff's department. Took over until the owner could retrieve
it. I bet you they all had a good laugh after it.
Yeah.
Do you guys know what this is from?
It's from Stripes.
Yes.
Yeah.
When you get blown off of the whatever tower that is.
Yep.
That was so great.
Yep. That's all he could say after the explosion.
They asked him like seven times, and that's his response.
I have no idea what clip that was from.
Really?
No clue. I'd say a good half of the clips we play, I don't know where they're from.
But do you know that part of the movie?
No.
Oh, okay. The mortar, you know.
Stripes kind of missed me. I've seen it, it did not land in my Animal House, lexicon of being able to repeat all the lines.
They're in basic training. They're going through the obstacles, and some guy messes up with a mortar shell, and it heads in, and Sergeant Hulk gets knocked off of this big tower, and all he can say is afterwards. All right, so a woman from New Zealand, this is horrifying, was diagnosed with a rare disease that left her locked inside her own body for a month, and I'll explain that. Anstey Campbell said that one day she went for a jog in January. She felt what felt like pins and needles in her foot. Her doctor told her that her symptoms, which were getting worse, could be stress-related. She was later rushed to the emergency room at the hospital. She was diagnosed with a Guillain-Barré syndrome, which we've heard of.
Yes, yes.
A rare autoimmune disorder in which a person's own immune system damages the nerves, causing muscle weakness and sometimes paralysis. Campbell became completely paralyzed and was placed in an induced coma for a week. She was later moved to the ICU. She was on a ventilator for 86 days, 31 of which she was conscious,
but unable to respond to anyone. And she said, I remember the doctors tried all these tests to get some sort of response, and it was really terrifying when I realized I was stuck inside my body.
She's in there fully lucid.
Yes.
But there's no way she can communicate to the outside world that she's getting their messages.
And she said, I was trying to do what they were telling me to do, but nothing was happening. I remember the doctor pushing hard on my brow bone to try and make my eyes open, and it was so painful, and all I was saying inside was stop.
Could you stop it?
Campbell is now slowly recovering. She started communicating through a twitch in her jaw.
Jeez.
And she also began to learn how to breathe on her own again and is now in physical therapy. She said some doctors have been positive and said that I will regain most, if not all, of my function, whereas others have said I'll be in a wheelchair for a long time.
That stuff freaks me out.
But the common theme is that her recovery will take a long time. That's pretty wild, man. Now, this is pretty cool. A Missouri bartender won $50,000 after receiving a winning Powerball ticket as a tip. 33-year-old Taylor Russey revealed that a regular customer at her job at Bleacher's Bar in O'Fallon buys lottery tickets for other regulars and leaves them along with a cash tip for the workers.
And they're never going to win.
Russey had received a Powerball ticket and a cash tip on October 18th by the customer. By the following day, Bleacher's Bar lottery terminal alerted the staff that a winning $50,000 ticket was sold at the establishment. She said, I was like, guys, who won all this money? Didn't tell anybody. And then she remembered the tip that she received, scanned it and at the bar's lottery terminal, and that's when she realized she won 50 grand. She said, I kind of stood there for a second, looked at the cook, and then looked at the ticket before I started laughing, and then I started crying. She said that she has no plans on spending the money on anything extravagant, but she will use it to get some dental work done. She said, I'm not that kind of person.
I tell you what I can do with this. Get some dental work done. He totally cost me our guy to find out the winning ticket. Oh, God. He's a sweetheart. He comes in here all the time.
Oh, my God.
But he's going to get some new choppers. God.
She needs to meet Gary.
Yes.
Gary Lauer.
My God. I've been waiting for you.
She said, this is not going to sustain me for the rest of my life. I still have to work. So it's just kind of a nice little bonus that she's getting. And I tell you what, we'll wrap it up right there. We'll end things right there. That is what I have in the bizarre file for you. We're going to take a break. Don't forget, we have a guest coming up a little bit later on. Dave Landau is going to be performing at Helium Comedy Club tonight, Friday and Saturday. So he is stopping by. We'll be back in just a moment. Stay with us, my friend.
Stream WMMR anywhere you have an internet connection. Check out the mobile app or go to WMMR.com. You'll figure it out from there.
Say goodbye to juggling paper coupons and missing out on the best deals. Download the Acme mobile app today to have your own personal grocery guru right in your pocket. Use it to plan your shopping list like a pro. Get personalized deals on the products you buy most and choose your shopping style. Whether it's in-store, delivery, or drive-up, where an experienced Acme associate will carefully select, bag your order, even pick up your prescriptions from the pharmacy, and bring it all right to your car. Acme. Fresh foods, local flavors. Say goodbye to juggling paper coupons and missing out on the best deals. Download the Acme mobile app today to have your own personal grocery guru right in your pocket. Use it to plan your shopping list like a pro. Get personalized deals on the products you buy most and choose your shopping style. Whether it's in-store, delivery, or drive-up, where an experienced Acme associate will carefully select, bag your order, even pick up your prescriptions from the pharmacy and bring it all right to your car. Acme. Fresh foods, local flavors.
Back with more of the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
All right, so for the next couple nights, our next guest is going to be in town performing at Helium Comedy Club. He's got a show tonight at 8, and then Friday and Saturday, they are 7:30 and 10 p.m. shows. And first visit to our studio, it's Dave Landau.
Who's here.
Thank you.
How are you, Dave?
Thank you very much. Good. How about you?
Nice to see you. We're doing well, man.
Have you played Philly before? Or
I've played like a couple bars here.
Okay. Yeah.
But yeah, I've never done Helium, which I'm looking forward to.
We've had a couple of newbies in recently to the area. There used to be a really crappy comedy scene in Philadelphia.
And really?
Now it's the rising tide has lifted all boats, and there's actually a pretty good scene. So you're from Detroit?
I grew up in Detroit, yeah. Right. I live in Harlem now, which is a very lateral move.
It's really not an ascension. But actually, Harlem in and of itself has begotten? Is it become sort of?
Is it like Brooklyn?
Little gentrified, a little trendy.
I think they tried.
They
and
tried
then,
it and failed.
Yeah, and then heroin was like, nah, we'll keep it.
We'll stay.
Yeah,
heroin wouldn't let it go. Have you ever played the Apollo?
No, I haven't. I walked by it.
Yeah, that's just as good.
A lot of my friends have played it. I went to see. I've seen shows there, which is really cool.
So I wasn't that I knew of you and we have mutual friends in the business and you have a really great style about you, and I was doing some research about you and watching some of the stuff, and you have sort of a bait and switch on stage. Your stuff is dark and funny, but presented in an easy to consume presentation, And finding your voice, I was reading about you learning to find your voice. You started what? You were young when you started, right?
I was right out of my fifth year of high school.
Okay.
Your fifth year
of high school?
Yes. And
early college.
Yes, early college. I started Second City, and then I started going into stand-up comedy after that. So
Yeah.
I did. I started pretty young.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so going to Second City, was that the intention to become an improv, sketch comedian. Type of comedian?
Absolutely. We were just talking about, Chevy Chase and, everybody that had come out of there, Dan Aykroyd, Bill Murray, Martin Short, all those were my heroes. So I kind of got into it because that's what I wanted to do, was sketch comedy. And then I just started doing stand-up, and I just sort of fell in love with it more and ended up staying on that path.
It's funny, because it seems to be there's, two schools. There's the sketch, there's the stand-up. And both sides seem to try the other,
Yes.
And
some can't make it port.
And some can't do it. But others find that they, I like that better. I went in for this, but I like that better.
Exactly.
They kind of gravitate towards that.
Yeah, I like them both. I think they're both important. I mean, even this, you guys are improvising the whole day.
Yeah, right.
And stuff. I think it's important to be able to do that as a comedian. I think that they're both very important, and they're both fun to do if you can do them both.
So reading about you and your history, you have a, it's the classic sort of a lot of trouble in your life growing up.
Yes.
Yeah, so arrested, 13 times?
13 times.
13 wow. times.
Yeah, 12 as a minor, once as an adult.
So,
and I've been sober about 10 years.
In recovery for
alcohol and drug addiction.
Okay, so we all know my brother's, 15 years sober and stuff like that.
Very cool.
But it's the classic, and it's kind of a weird thing, but a lot of times some of the funniest, sharpest people are generated from a life that is less than wonderful, in the earlier stages. So given your drug, it's like the chaos theory. You don't want to screw with something because it could screw up, something else.
But yes.
It clearly informed your take on life. When did it start to work its way into your comedy? You just said, F it, I'm just going to go there.
It was definitely after I got sober and I started telling stories on stage where I was finally not afraid to talk about getting arrested and being locked in a mental hospital with a kid who thought he was a werewolf.
Really?
Yeah.
So that's, see, to me, that's, but the you remember the first time on stage when you thought, all right, I'm going to F it, I'm just going to do it.
I say 5 years in, because at first I was really clean. I was trying to get work. So I was I really just need to, just sort of be okay, and I don't want to offend anybody. And then after 5 years, I just want to start telling my story.
Yeah.
So it went from just trying to make jokes to start talking about everything that I had been through, and people relate to that more.
They do, especially because you are accessible. An attribute I find immediately that I connect with in any comedian is self-deprecation.
Yes.
So it allows the audience to come in. And so it was responded to people. You noticed people were digging that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So Werewolf Boy.
Yes. This is great.
Yeah. Do tell.
Yeah. We need to hear about
Do tell.
Oh, and you teased.
Yeah.
So it's a long story if you want to hear it.
It doesn't have to be the full thing, but whatever you want to tell.
Take us to the initial bite and the gypsy woman who warned you about it.
Yes.
I like how you took your jacket off in preparation.
You did. I was just, I get nervous. You
boys,
might be behind me.
Boys,
this day.
Yeah.
I might start sweating during this one, boys.
If I see a big dog, I get all upset.
Why wouldn't you?
So
you were in, by the way, for some of the, you ended up, you were in this hospital.
I was in a mental hospital.
Right. And so how, you're in there, and did you meet Werewolf Boy out of the gate?
Well, I walked in. Well, I didn't walk in. I was escorted in with handcuffed by three cops.
Wow. Okay.
I had been found after bonging a fifth. I had fell through a glass table.
Oh, my God.
And I woke up the next day to the police who knew me. It was my sixth arrest. And they were like, hey, Dave. And I was like, hey, gentlemen. And
So you were like Norm at Cheers.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Except yeah. without. Yeah, he never really fell through the bar.
Yeah, not as happy.
Yeah, he never. He never told his girlfriend she had orangutan breasts and a cigarette backwards and fell through a table.
No, I don't remember subtle that episode.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But very similar.
Very similar. More Frasier behind the wheel.
Yes. I got it.
In his eye.
No, I walk into this mental hospital and... they took my shoelaces and everything. They were worried I was having DTs very badly,
okay.
too. And they thought it might have been even schizophrenia, which it wasn't. It was just I was having delusions because I would have withdrawals so badly.
Yeah, yeah.
So we walk into this back room, and there's two beds, and the counselor's like, Dave, this is Reese. Reese, Dave, you know each other. You're going to be roommates. And he goes, what are you in for? And I go, I beer bonged a fifth, fell through a table. I go, what about you? He goes, I'm a werewolf. And I was like, so I look at the counselor, I'm like, is this dude for real? And he goes, yeah, it's fine, don't worry about it. And I go, you don't look like a werewolf, Reese. He goes, yeah, I'm not a werewolf right now. There's a full moon. I transform into a werewolf. Last month, I almost killed my dad. I don't remember because I black out. And I was like, oh, that's neat. Hey, counselor, I'm going to need my own room. This dude thinks he's a werewolf.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'll never forget, he goes, oh, he's not a werewolf. You're going to be fine. I'm like, yeah, I know he's not a werewolf.
Yeah.
He doesn't know he's not a werewolf.
Right. Yeah,
so yeah. They're like, look, you get a roommate. Everybody gets a roommate. And this is juvenile mental facility, so I don't even know how many of those are around anymore.
How old are you at this point?
17 or 16? Yeah. Right. I'm going to bed, and all of a sudden from the next bunk, I just start hearing one night, like,
oh, my God.
Oh, no.
I'm like, good night, buddy. And all of a sudden, just,
oh, no.
And this dude stands up, and I mean rips his clothes off, and just starts, like, like barking at me.
Oh, my God.
This dude lunges at me. Butt naked, and I grab a lamp to hit him with it, and it was glued down.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, instead of defending myself, I sort of just opened my arms and embraced him into me.
Okay.
So he was on top of me trying to bite my face off, which didn't Jesus bother me Christ. As much as his, you know, members slamming on my thighs while I screamed werewolf, werewolf, through tears and terror. So these two counselors bust in. One sees him naked on top of me, and the other one looks at the other counselor and goes, do we let him finish?
Oh, my.
And I'm like, I'm not. We're not having sex. He's trying to murder me. And they hit him in the butt with a syringe they call booty juice, which is filled with a trank that knocks out mental patients.
Okay.
And they drag him off me and took him out of the room, and I was just in the corner in a little sex ball. Crying my eyes out, like saying I'll never drink again, which was like my catchphrase.
Yeah.
And
that was your get or death.
Everybody's exactly,
like,
yeah.
Oh, Dave.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll never drink again. Just waking up on a driveway.
I tell you, a werewolf will definitely set you right.
The second they moved me to a rehab after that because they decided it was all addiction. And then after that rehab, I think the day I got out, I started drinking again. And
Jesus.
Yeah, it was bad.
Hey, I want to ask you about beer bonging a fifth.
Yes.
What was it of? What were you drinking?
Absolut vodka.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, my friend Nick.
And so that's... can kill you. That's lethal. And so did you puke some of that up or did that stay down?
Nope. Stayed down.
Dear
God. I was probably about 10 beers in when I did it too.
Oh, you're lucky you didn't die.
Yeah. By far. My friend Nick grabbed it and then my friend Anthony poured in an entire fifth. And then Nick was like, dude, this is dumb. And I'm not kidding. He poured in some Sprite and goes, now you're good.
The Sprite will cut it?
Yeah.
The chaser.
I needed the chaser. Yeah. God forbid.
Hey, thanks for looking out, bro.
You know, we were talking about this, though.
I was garbage.
But you see, you had a number. We had Steve-O in, you know, and Steve-O's, you know. A friend of the show. And talking about, you know, there's those. Some people have the benefit of having werewolf encounters that at least sort of prod them to maybe can reconsider their life choices. And there are other people who are doing stuff but can still function in life, and it takes longer for them to get to the point, you know.
Right.
So
if you are so young.
If you had a werewolf encounter, where was the rock bottom that made you hang the 180?
When I was an adult.
Okay.
Because it wasn't a joke anymore.
It wasn't a joke anymore.
Like,
right?
When I was young, I remember one time when I was young, I was arrested. I passed out in a toga and a Burger King crown waiting for a stop sign to turn green.
Wow.
And
wow.
It was in front of a police station.
You know, it's weird because
when I was arrested, I didn't go to the car. I just got walked to the station.
Wow. We laugh at it, but we also understand the impact of it. But how do you, as you're relaying the stories and being very candid, and people are laughing, you know, you've got to keep it like a split tab running, like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So you're sort of, you can't help but say, because I've never been drunk a day in my life, but I hear these things and it's like.
Really?
Yeah. My brother's.
Yeah. So it just kind of kept you out of it.
Right. And wow. it's just a weird thing. Is it sort of a weird tab for you to run where you're relaying the stories and people will laugh? Because we are laughing, but it was your misery at the time.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. But I think that's part of it, is everybody has these people in their life, and everybody knows an addict, and everybody has, you know, so I like to talk about that on stage because we've all done stuff, and especially drunk, that we completely regret. Mm-hmm. And when I'm able
it's
to
relatable.
Throw, yeah, and I'm able to throw out my stories for that reason. I mean, I've just a story about taking my mother-in-law to the, you know, airport with a breathalyzer in my car and trying to, like, I'm not sure what it is. You know, I'm just getting in. She's like, oh, that's, she's like, oh, thanks for taking me to the airport. I'm like, yeah, hang on.
Oh my God.
What does that do? I'm like, it starts the car.
It allows us to go.
Oh, my God.
I want to ask you about Artie Lang. You spoke with Artie recently. And
2 days ago, yeah.
He's a recovering addict, obviously. I think Rogan tweeted recently that he's been, I think Artie's been sober for 9 months or something like
yes.
that. And Rogan said something to the effect of that he's funnier than ever, that he's doing really well. We all root for Artie to make it through. But what was your experience with him like?
A 180. I mean, he and I, it was the Artie and Anthony show with Dave Landau, which was what I was on. And
so you were the third mic, he was the second, and Anthony Cumia was right.
The main
host. No, Anthony. So, and then Artie had to leave, obviously.
Yeah. He was doing heroin all the
yeah.
time. I
yeah.
mean, he would just go to the bathroom and be like, I'll be right back. I just have to pee. And then you're like, okay. And then you come back with sunglasses and powder.
And how do you react to that? I mean, you're at work and this is happening and you must have known.
Oh, I knew the whole time.
Right.
It's tough because you can't force somebody to get sober, and I can't. Because people even ask me, they're like, did you talk to Artie? I'm like, yeah, I don't think Artie's missing a stiff talking to from me.
Did you read Crash and Burn?
Because
he was in here. I just read Crash and Burn. And, you know, when I read the part and I said to him, he's here, it's like he actually like bled himself out to sort of get the euphoria you get, like to be sort of. The equivalent of like high.
Well,
like
yeah, he drank bleach and stabbed himself like 7 times.
Right,
like a gentleman.
Yeah. So your speech to him wouldn't change that.
No. But he is sober now. I mean, he was a totally different guy, and he had issues with me because he wanted to blame the fact that he lost his job on me.
Really?
Yeah, he was upset, and he was attacking me on Twitter like a year ago, and I was like, dude, what is this? Like, just call me. You know, this isn't my fault. But he was angry. He was angry at everybody else but himself. And the other day when I interviewed Artie, it was the first time he had taken responsibility for himself. I had never heard him actually blame him, which I thought was incredible. You know, he really is saying, it's my fault, I'm a heroin addict. But he said something that made sense. He's like, I really enjoy it.
Yeah.
He's like, I really enjoy the life of a drug addict and the stuff that he goes, I'm partying at hotels. I got hookers around me. I'm doing meth. And then I have soccer moms going, hey, you should really, you know, come live this boring life. And he's like, no, I'm good. I'm fine.
Right.
You know, and he's being honest about what he likes. But the party's over and he knows it.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, his nose, he looks like, you know, like when
the cartilage is all gone.
Yeah, it looks
like
when
a flat tire.
It's like when Marty Moose got punched by Griswold.
Yeah, totally. You're right. That's exactly right. But I mean, you can tell because I follow him, and we always send out stuff and messages, you know, and encourage him. But it is a difference. You can tell there's a tangible difference now.
Yes, and he's a genuinely sweet guy and a good person.
Well,
and there's just the addict part of him, and I really hope that he can stay on the path that he's on.
Was he apologetic to you for...
Very much.
All right, that's cool.
He came in even a few months ago and apologized. I don't know if he remembered it, but he did. And then he came back this time, and Anthony was out. And I was glad he still came in so he and I could just kind of talk and talk about what he had been through. And he'd been through a lot.
Well, the stuff your stuff is very funny. I was looking at some of your comedic inspiration. You had Dangerfield and Joan Rivers and Bernie Mac and Robert Schimmel, who's
he was so good.
One of the greats, and Eddie Murphy and Chappelle. So with these people, but your style is definitely a very unique style. You did the Last Comic Standing, and I remember watching this. And was it Roseanne Barr?
Yes.
Who, like, there was a bizarre thing where she didn't get a joke of yours.
Correct.
And explain what happened, because I vaguely remember it, but it was weird, because I think you were the best easily of the lot that was competing.
Thank you.
And it sort of ended up hobbling you.
Yeah, they even started the entire season on my joke. So they knew I was irreverent. They knew what I did. And this was a couple episodes in. And I came out and I did a joke where I'm trying to remember exactly how it goes, but it was along the lines of, it was basically about women's periods. And
right.
I'd never seen the string hanging out of it until I moved in with a woman. And I was walking by the bathroom and I said, oh, good, you caught the mouse. I was setting up traps everywhere. Everybody likes this but the woman.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's good.
But I did that joke and she's going, I don't get it.
Yeah.
I don't get it. And
she wouldn't let it go.
No, like she kind of would, but I started making fun of her, not in like a horrible way, but just gently teasing her the way that you think you would do. And that upset her a lot.
Yeah.
And then Keenan Ivory Wayans loved me, and he's one of my heroes. So I was happy that
he's great.
Oh, he's so awesome. And then Russell Peters loved it. So they're laughing at her for not getting it. And then the audience is yelling at her what it means.
Right.
So while you have this whole audience screaming what a tampon string is at this woman who's now red-faced, embarrassed.
Yeah.
And then me on stage, she wanted to eliminate me from the show after that.
Oh, my God.
Wow. Because your trajectory is good. Honestly,
the joke
if you
hit.
If you look at all the seasons of that show, you know, who is the Carrie Underwood of Last Comic Standing?
Oh, I don't think there is.
There is. There's nothing. Yeah, yeah.
I don't think anybody watched it.
of your season?
I think people watched our season.
I watched. Your season was good. You were the standout.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
Who won your season?
Rodman.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, because that's what they do. They go, this guy has to win. It's PC culture. And Joe Mackey should have in the top three.
Yeah,
I
yeah.
think nothing against Rodman.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, seems forced.
He talks with his hands a lot, right, Rodman? Is that the...
I don't even know who that is.
We've had him in studio, I believe.
He's very urban, you know, does a lot of the, I don't know how to put it, like...
Well, it's just not
deaf.
Put it.
Yeah, it's probably best not to put
it. Just not put it.
Yeah.
Just not put it. There have been some people along that show that I had never heard of before. There were other season ones. Like, you know, I had known Todd Glass before he was on Last Comic Standing. But, like, Gary Gulman, for instance, I had no idea who he was before he was on Last Comic Standing. And he's, like, one of my favorites. So,
oh, he's great.
Yeah, yeah. And
do you even need, though, with the structure, like, now with the other avenues of, like, other ways to get noticed, like with Last Comic?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you're a touring comedian, and you know, just having, you know, the idea of being on a primetime television show.
It helps, you know, like Rodman, I guess what I was trying to say was, as far as like the comedians that went on there, there were a lot of black comedians with a much harder, better voice.
Yeah.
And they kind of take what's a little bit softer because they think it's better for the mainstream.
Sure. Yeah.
So there were a lot of people on there that I think got pulled out pretty quickly just for safety.
Okay.
And especially at that time. So, but I think it's beneficial. I would rather be thrown off by Roseanne because people remember that than become second and nobody cares.
But then again, if you're playing to win, if that's what you want to do, then essentially you're playing to the room. So maybe he was doing the right thing.
Exactly.
Right?
And he won, you know, 100 grand for it. So, I mean, he did it right, you know.
Yeah.
It just, you can't trade in who you are, and I couldn't do that. I couldn't become that network friendly at the time.
By the way, if you're tuning in, it's Dave Landau. If you're just getting here, he's going to be at Helium Comedy Club tonight, tomorrow, and Saturday. Speaking of that, of playing to the room, you've obviously that's probably something you don't have to worry about anymore, as, you know, showing up to a gig and, okay, what type of people am I going to be talking to tonight, and I should tailor the,
you know what I mean? I should curb down maybe the edgier stuff or anything along those lines. But along your career, I'm sure you had to do that.
Oh, 100%.
All the time, I would imagine.
Especially for colleges.
Right.
Yeah, when you're doing like lunchroom shows to kids who hate you.
I used to do the college. I swear to God, Dave, I actually went into a room. They had no sound system. And they handed me, and I kid you not, a Rudy Valley-style megaphone.
Nice.
With the head on. Oh.
And, Dave, one time, Steve and I, we went, they sent us as a morning show to go to this juvenile facility.
Was I there?
I would have recognized you, but it was like a career day type of thing, and we were going to go talk to the kids. My God. Number one, I've never seen a group of more disinterested people in my life. I mean, these are teenagers who have did something to end up in here, and they just looked miserable.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, why not? They're in jail. They're in teenage jail.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like, I was paranoid.
It made Dangerous Minds look like Glee.
Yeah. You know?
Really?
So, yeah, it was. Yeah. And so they could give a rat's ass about our career day speech.
Of course.
But
the only tears in there are tattooed on their face. Right. Not a lot of regret.
So in your lockup time, did they ever have people try to come and speak to you? Or
they brought us to the jail and did like a scared straight.
They did do that.
Yeah.
So what was that like? Do you remember years ago when the first scared straight came on television?
Oh, yeah. Give me your shoes.
Yeah. They aired the curses. It was all, remember, they on regular TV, they aired
the
curses.
How shocking it was.
It was so shocking. It was at Rahway, I think.
Oh, yeah. It was somewhere nice.
So they did the scared straight to you.
They brought us through, brought us through Wayne County Jail in Detroit, which is gorgeous, lovely facility. And I remember the one guy was just going like, I like your earring. I'm like, thank you. I appreciate that. I really like your earring.
Oh, man. Okay. Oh, my God.
But this one guy, I'll never forget. I'm trying to figure out how to make this radio clean. So, but he just goes, hey, Mr. James, how many times you been effed up your A? And this guy in the back goes, about 50. And he goes, and he's for real. And then just stared at me.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, all right. So it's basically, for us, they just sexually assaulted us. Verbally.
Could they touch you?
No, they were behind bars, thank God. Like, it wasn't like the Scared Straight TV show where they can, like,
wander around and
grab your shoelaces.
Right.
And take everything from you. No, it was very much like they're behind these bars and this is what they have to do so they can get out in 20 days.
See, I wonder if it's become like, because A, you've seen it, and B, it's almost like the haunted attractions where it says the axe won't touch you. You know?
Right.
Like,
right.
I think maybe you need to have that element of fear to really, you know.
Yeah, I think like with haunted houses, though, the ghosts aren't going to break free and rape you.
That's a good point.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
Sorry, is that too blunt?
I don't know.
Okay,
I
was
just saying the ones where that might happen.
Yeah. I mean, maybe. I don't know. It would be a heck of a haunted house.
Yeah.
My mom was a psychiatric nurse, and she worked at the facilities that you probably visited and stayed at some point. So my entire life was that. I mean, she was like constantly working, you know, with me and my brothers to be like, this isn't what's going to happen to you.
Did she talk to you about what would happen there?
Oh, yeah.
She's got wolf stories.
She has so many. And when you said, I like your earring, nothing. She had one guy who used to say to her, I like you. I really like you. And and she was in like lockdown units where they would have to call to have somebody unlock the door. So it was scary.
Real points. Criminal units.
Yeah.
Then. Uh-huh. Yes. Oh, lovely.
That's great.
Fortunately, we've let most of the those healthcare facilities go. So they're all on the street now. So good luck, everybody.
Yeah, right.
Do you have kids?
I do.
How old are they?
Four.
4 years old?
Just one, four, yeah.
All right, 4 years old. So your life is pretty transparent. You live on stage.
Yes.
Eventually, they're gonna find out all about Dad and what all has happened. Are you you cool with all that?
Yeah. Somebody asked me the other day, like, what if you catch him smoking pot? And I was like, well, he's four, so I'd be impressed.
But, I mean, eventually, as he becomes a teenager and, you know, YouTube, I'm sure there's plenty of things out there to see what Dad's doing, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And talking about your life.
I'll be a terrible example. I will be honest with him because, you know, my parents weren't honest with me about any, not my dad wasn't, but my mom. Was
there a history there?
Yeah, there was a lot of addiction. Like, okay. My uncle died of heroin, and then my mom was like, his heart was so big, God just wanted him in heaven. I was like, okay.
Oh, wow.
You know.
So he had an enlarged heart from the heroin.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, he just was so giving that he died when he was 35. So it was just sort of that. So I was never aware that there were these issues in my family. Like, Like, I didn't know my own grandma was an alcoholic. I knew she took Vicodin because I stole it out of her purse.
But you can bring that to your own. You can give the stories of the werewolf and all that stuff as a cautionary tale. Both my parents were not addicts, but they drank and smoked and all that stuff. And I didn't. I just chose not to. But it sometimes it's just the luck of the draw. I know these things can go through generations, but you have such a unique perspective on it. I think you can impart some real truth.
That's my hope. Yeah. And I do. And I'm writing a book right now, and I'm pulling stuff out from my past that's very, very heavy and very real. I had a different thing. My dad had Agent Orange in Vietnam.
Really?
So he died of brain cancer when I was a teenager, which the government was like, that's not our fault. And the insurance company called it a pre-existing condition.
Agent Orange is a pre-existing condition.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah.
And we fought the VA. They've admitted it, that it's their fault, but they still haven't done anything because they're rotten bastards. But
and did that set you in a spiral?
It did, because I kind of lost my dad when I was young, and there weren't people around. I was being raised by my aunt. So I had different things happen to me that I hope doesn't happen to him, which caused me to spiral out of control. So I want to explain that to him as well when he gets older and he wants to start experiencing stuff. And I'm not going to say don't try drugs. They're fun. But I do want to make him aware that there is a gene that we have that is very dangerous.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the same way, because I've got teenagers, and I know eventually, and they've hinted at, wanting to be able to take a drink. And I'm not going to say, no, you're not going to drink. I mean, we're going to wait till you're of age before you can do it. But the piece of advice I'm going to try to get through is that when you think you should have one more drink, don't do it.
Yes.
I think one more will work. No. If I can impart that little bit of wisdom in there, I think that might help a little bit.
Or drink our sponsors' products.
Yes, that's a good one, too.
If you're going to do it right. Mm-hmm. That's where I'm glad that there's the Uber and Lyft and all that, though, because I didn't have that. It was, if I wanted to go to the bar, I drove to the bar. Yep.
That's a good point. We used to hear stories years ago. Kiefer Sutherland kept getting into trouble. Like, here's a dude with all the money and hire an effing chauffeur. But now anybody's essentially got it right. The Lyft and the Uber stuff is right there.
And that was my issue.
I wonder if statistically that is part of the reason maybe there's been a drop in fatalities due to drunk driving. I'll
bet, it's got to be 100%.
Yeah.
Unless, of course, the Uber driver kills you, which is not uncommon.
You were about to say, I'm sorry.
Guys. No. Isn't that amazing, though? Like, people are dying, and they're like, hey, guys, 10% off? Huh? Sorry about that. Meanwhile, you're wondering why you're riding in a car filled with plastic.
Unfortunately, we got a wrap, man. But Dave's going to be at Helium tonight. There's one show, 8 o'clock, and then Friday and Saturday there are two shows, 7:30 and 10 p.m. So you want to get those tickets at heliumcomedy.com. We hope we'll see you again sometime soon.
I appreciate you guys having me on. Thank you very much.
You got it. Dave Landau.
Yeah!
Take a break, and we'll be back in a moment. Stay with us.
What's new?
Glad you asked.
Disturbed. Revivalists. Motionless and White.
New music. More of everything that rocks.
On 93.3 WMMR.
The interesting little story that Steve brought me up to speed on, and it concerns actor and rapper T.I. So T.I., I know from the Ant-Man movies. He's one of Scott Lang's buddies.
Yes.
I really don't. I don't know his music personally, but
I thought you'd be all over that.
It is. It's my jam, but for some reason I missed. So he was on a podcast and he was talking about sex education for his kids, and he talks about that. This is pretty wild. He says, not only have we had the conversation, we have yearly trips to the gynecologist to check her hymen. He says, yes, I go with her. I will say, as of her 18th birthday, her hymen is still intact.
Oh, dear God.
He acknowledged a woman's hymen can be broken because it's considered a sign that that they've had sex. He acknowledged that a woman's hymen can be broken outside of sexual activity, but countered by saying,
So then they come and they say, well, I just want you to know that there are other ways besides sex that the hymen can be broken, like bike riding, athletics, horseback riding, and just other forms of athletic physical activity. So I say, and I'm quoting, look, doc, she don't ride no horses. She don't ride no bike. She don't play no sports. Just check the hymen, please, and give me back my results expeditiously.
How awkward for every person in that room involved in this.
All that bad grammar.
Yes.
That
I mean,
too.
It's awkward for everybody listening right now.
Yeah.
Well, here's the deal. You know, so obviously there was a sort of a seismic wave that emanated from this this story and all different takes on it. But, yeah, imagine you're the gynecologist. And by the way, I think what's probably happening is the gynecologist is banging his daughter. So
oh
that's
God.
Probably
the, in but, 2018, by the way, virginity tests like these were condemned by the United Nations agencies, the World Health Organization, UN Human Rights, and UN Women. A statement read, this medically unnecessary and oftentimes painful, humiliating, and traumatic practice must end. WHO states that there is no evidence that either method can prove whether a woman or girl has had intercourse or not.
Well, also this. You know, you guys have kids, and obviously as they get more mature, you explain sex and so on and so forth. And then, you know, let me ask, what's your take on this?
How about a little bit of trust?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
And privacy.
And privacy.
Yeah, I mean, listen, maybe.
And could mom, why is dad going, A, B, this, and the way he lays it out there, it's like, I want my results.
Well, it also, I think it breeds secrecy in their relationship. And, you know, what I strive for and hope for with my relationship with my children is an open and honest conversation all the time.
Right.
No matter how painful it is to maybe hear something.
Yep.
Because there are two people that each of my children can count on no matter what. And that is me and my wife.
You got to have that. My dad stopped checking my taint when I was 11.
Right.
Hey, no, my wife is really good at that, Casey.
She is great at that.
She is so much better at that than I am as far as coming in to the kids and making sure they know regularly there is absolutely anything, no matter what, without question, that there's nothing you can't tell us. There's everything you can tell us.
Uh-huh.
So please be honest with us.
Yeah.
And, And it can be awkward and weird and uncomfortable, but I think you owe that to your kids.
Well, to go to like Footloose, how do you expect someone to be trustworthy if you don't show you have a level of trust for them?
Yeah.
You know,
I was driving my son home from soccer practice last night, actually from soccer practice to dinner, and I'm not going to go into the details of what he said after this statement, but he said, "Can I admit something to you?" And just the fact that he's a 13-year-old boy, and the fact that he came to me to admit something and that he wanted to that he trusted me enough to talk to me about it was really I felt really proud. And I was proud of him for being brave enough to talk to me about it. And we had an open and honest conversation about something that he had done that had gotten a little bit of trouble.
I've entered into a business relationship with Hyman Roth.
Hyman. But yeah, getting back to the Hyman.
Yeah.
But I don't think that if I were a judgy, preachy, over-controlling helicopter parent, he would have come to me for help and wanted to admit to something.
That's
to me
one
about
thing.
It.
My like again, you know, growing up, it's just okay. Just come and talk to us first.
Yeah,
right.
And it'll be that case. I mean, listen, you it's your prerogative to raise your kids the way you want. But the way that he posted, the way he phrases this, it's like,
sounds like he's a fear of God dad as well. And by that, I don't mean that spiritually. I mean fear me.
Yeah,
type of things. How if you do this, you are, you know, that's what it sounds like to me.
It sounds borderline abusive, right? Because it doesn't have to just be physical abuse; it can be mental and mental torture as well. Kathy and I were talking a couple of weeks ago about people that we knew that were in relationships with young adult women that had to answer to their father as if they were five-year-old girls.
Oh, right.
Girls that were like 21, 22 years old who had asked their father if they could go to the movies.
What?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it was, it's ridiculous and it's terrible.
I understand wanting, like he said, like, for
it's
example.
It's overprotective.
I understand that you want to make sure that your kid doesn't want to make mistakes, but also I think this is that, I'm not going to presuppose to tell people how to raise their kids or this, but from this T.I. story, it seems I would feel very insulted and very demeaned if I had to be brought in there like livestock.
Oh, yeah.
To be checked,
Yes, absolutely.
You know?
And being scared,
too. To be scared?
What if there's some kind of false
positives?
Yeah, and then I have to defend myself. There's no way to raise a child. Yeah. I don't think anyway. But,
yeah. You know. Also, kids are eventually going to have sex.
Yeah. Yes!
You know? So, like, there's that side of it, too. It's like, what if she had been sexually active?
Well, she might be, and she might be a master of S&Ds, you know what I mean? Because she can't do the other stuff. You know what I mean?
S&Ds.
Yeah.
Okay. That'll be her rapper
peens
name.
And heinies. Yeah, that's it's all peens and heinies.
Yeah, well, you know, that's T.I.'s competition in the world of rap is S&Ds.
Master S&D.
Yeah, but my name's Master S&D.
S&D.
Y'all know Doodle Team. What? All right, you guys are the S side, and you guys are the D side.
All right.
And this is very contemporary rap.
It is. It's not.
Well, it's not like T.I.'s had a hit in a decade or two.
I don't know. Did he have any hits?
I don't remember.
Yeah, S&Ds.
S&Ds. Wow. Well, it's pretty weird, man. Yeah.
Did you get the talk? Did you get the official talk from your
my dad?
Your dad.
I did. I remember it clearly.
Okay.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And I already knew everything.
Son, I want to tell you about S&Ds. It's not going to taste good at first.
We're going to talk about peens and heinies.
Yeah, peens and doodle peen.
Yeah, my dad gave me the talk, and it was awkward, and I pretty much knew what you do, how babies are made, if that is, but...
When does the cup come in?
The cup?
Oh, no. My God.
I don't ever... My mother kind of gave me a little bit of information. My dad probably in... Sort of, but I ended up learning it. I had an older brother, and then you sort of accrued it that way. And
Steve... I still don't know how it works.
There you go. But you know how to shop at Target.
Never spoke a word of anything. I told you we went to the zoo. And she was like, oh, here, this is how animals make babies.
Will you talk to your own son about it?
Yeah, but listen, I don't think that was the right thing to do, was not have one word spoken about it.
Yeah. Well, I have something different. It's about a father giving a daughter advice, and it didn't go so well. And it doesn't have to do with sex, but I want to get your guys' take on this.
All right.
I'm curious about this. So a 52-year-old man, it was on a Reddit thread, had said that he told his 24-year-old daughter that she needed to lose weight in order to get the attention of men.
Ooh.
Now, but let me give you the backstory here, because I want to see which side you guys take. So the dad wrote, my daughter is very overweight, 5'3", about 200 pounds. So she's very short and obviously weighs a lot. She always talks about how she wants a boyfriend and she has never had one. He said she was saying that it's unfair that all her friends have boyfriends and get attention from guys, and how guys are a-holes who never give her the time of the day. He then decided to give his daughter some advice. He explained, I told her delicately that it could be helpful to try to lose some weight, and that unfortunately people are often shallow, and that could be something that would help get her male attention, feel more confident, and also generally be healthier. He added that he knew that it would be a sore spot, but in his mind, his intentions were good. His daughter, however, did not appreciate her dad's advice. He explained, she yelled at me about how all guys are the same, even my effing dad, and stormed off. The dad went on to say that he was only trying to be helpful, and said that she has no genetic predisposition to being overweight. She just eats quite a bit and does not get much exercise. Although some disagreed, most commenters did agree with the dad's approach. So... It's a touchy subject, but she's 24 years old and is going to her dad, and you know, and this is what he believes. And I, to be honest, I think if he handled it the right way, I think that's okay to say to somebody.
He sees his daughter having a tough go of it and being, you know, twisted up about this, and he's trying in a way to do right by also. Just on a health level, you want to make sure that she has a good long life, but she's complaining about this. I don't know. You know, it doesn't seem like from what the description is that he came at her in an arch way.
Right.
So at the worst, I would say, you know, I don't know how he actually said it to her, but I think he was trying.
She
it sounds like
him,
his heart is in the right place.
Yeah.
Now that's what he's saying. But you know, people hear things in a much different way, and maybe that's not the place. You know. I mean, and then there's also people say, well, then there you'll find somebody who appreciates you for just
too.
Who you are.
There's that too. But if she's saying all guys are a-holes
and she's not having any luck,
and then you may have to change something about you. Or you just keep looking
Perhaps
you will eventually find somebody, hopefully.
You exude more. Maybe he's saying you would exude more self-confidence or what? Who knows?
Part of it,
I don't know. There have been people, you know. I don't know. That's a tough one.
And weight is such a sensitive issue for everybody.
It is.
You know, and so you know, if she's overweight, she knows that she's overweight. So it's a tough thing for her to hear from anybody. Probably even worse to hear from her own father. But his heart does seem like it's in the right place.
Yeah. And dieting's hard. I mean,
when you're done with that dead zebra, we need to talk.
But dieting's hard, you know. I mean, changing your lifestyle is difficult to do. At least in the beginning, it can become easy after a while.
Yeah.
And some people, I think it seems like too much work. Why should I have to work?
Like, if your parents ever came to you with a bit of advice that. My parents always gave me good advice. You know, they always try. I never thought they were interceding just to F with me. They were trying to get me to do something. Like, oh, you're just saying I'm fat, or, you know.
My grandfather, my mom's dad, once told me that my ass was getting big. and I was just like, and this was, you know, senior year of high school, something like that.
And I
was
like, it.
No. It was you're putting on some pounds.
Yeah.
Try growing up in an Italian family.
Well, he's the Italian.
Oh, all right.
He's the
okay,
Italian
was,
side. So my mom's
I didn't
dad.
Realize you had
part, yeah, my okay. mom's dad is Italian. My mom's half Italian, half Irish. And so that it was just no filter. And it was, Nick, you're getting a fat ass. And
that's exactly what it is. It's no filter. That was all of my aunts, my uncles, cousins, everybody. You gained like 5 pounds, and the next holiday, they were sure to tell you.
Mm-hmm. In a way of look at you.
What are
you, yeah, what are you doing to yourself there? You know?
Exactly like Nick.
Oh, you're putting on some weight.
Your ass is getting big.
Yep.
Okay. Wow.
Your boobs are big. Is it because you're gaining weight?
Wow.
All of it.
I didn't
all
get
of
that
it.
One.
Oh, you gain weight in your face.
Wow.
Nick, cool. What are you, a deep cup of disappointment?
And what is it? How does that feel, Kath, when you hear something like that? Just used to that at that type of delivery?
To be honest with you, yeah. I mean, it really is. It's everybody, and it's not. It wasn't just towards me. It's towards anybody, whether you're male, female. It's just
everybody got it.
Just them. And
who is the biggest culprit for that kind of candor assessment?
Everybody. It was everyone on my Italian side of the family. That's all they. Are concerned about.
Okay.
You know, is looking good and, you know, making sure you're fit. And if you did gain a little weight, then they'll let you know.
Well, I see you purchased an extra ass.
It wasn't like, I don't think it was mean. It was just, like Nick said, no filter.
You can do better.
It was an observation that was candid and it could hurt. But it didn't matter.
Yeah.
You know, those were the words that were coming out of his mouth. And Kathy's right. He was not selective in his assessment of people's, you know, weight gain or anything like that. Everybody got it equally.
What was your response when he said that?
Oh, thanks, Pop-Up.
And then the other side of my family are like the fiery Irish people who are like, get the hell out of here. You don't talk to people like that. You know, so everybody battled because the Italian side would say it. And then my mom's side of the family would be like, screw you.
Wow. Yeah, yeah.
It's wild.
I guess maybe it works for some people, other people not. But the daughter in this particular scenario got really upset, and this guy says he was just trying to help. So.
I mean, we don't know how she perceived it, how exactly he said it. It seems like he was trying to do the right thing.
I'm going to go to Rachel. Hi, Rachel. You're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, so after my divorce, my mom said the same thing to me. She's like, you're never going to find somebody unless you lose weight. I mean, you know, you need to make yourself look better. And it really hurt to hear that from her. But I didn't really listen to her. And it just kind of like not didn't pay attention to her. And I ended up finding somebody, my husband now, who loves me exactly the way I am. doesn't care about how much I weigh or what I look like. I mean, he does, but he loves me exactly the way I am. And
yeah, and there's that point. So what you just heard Preston reciting this Reddit thread here and what the father tried, what he says he tried to impart to her and the way he tried. Did that sound like too much to you, or did it sound like his heart was in the right place?
I mean, I think his heart was in the right place, but this girl knows she's overweight. No one wants to be overweight.
Right.
I don't want to be fat. I mean, if I could be thin, I would, and I'm always trying. I know I'm fat, you know?
Yeah.
But there are guys out there that like overweight women.
That's for sure. Yeah. Absolutely.
My husband loves my body exactly the way it is, and he gets upset when I start to lose weight. So, you know, he likes me exactly the way I am. And it hurts. My mother had her heart in the right place, but...
Yeah,
you know, I know she didn't need to tell me I was overweight. I knew that.
No, that's a good point. Yeah. It's not like it comes as news, or you know. But I mean, you again, some people there's 9,000 different you know things to say in this scenario that you know that, and some people are predisposed to be that way. You know, and other people say, well, it's a health issue, but some people are healthy. You know, there's all different elements. Ultimately, it comes down to what makes you happy. When are you your happiest? Exactly. You found somebody, and you're good.
And once I knew that I was happy about myself,
yeah,
and the way I felt about myself, and I'm sorry, my daughter.
Hey, put on Disney.
Once I exuded the confidence of myself, regardless of my weight, that's when the men started paying attention to me.
There you go. Yeah. I think confidence is really key.
Yeah,
it is.
That
all right.
More attractive than anything.
Yeah.
Thank you, Rachel.
Yeah.
But listen, I do believe if you are way overweight, you owe it to. To be healthy.
To be healthy for the people in your life.
Here's a story. 25-year-old guy, Matthew Hauser, told he had 6 months to live.
Yeah.
Ooh.
He'd been hospitalized once again because his weight was coming in at over 800 pounds.
So he was heading towards a bad way.
He said, I was on my deathbed. I figured, well, this is it. Might as well start planning my funeral. 3 years later, he's hardly recognizable to friends. He's lost nearly 600 pounds.
Ooh, wow.
And is continuing his weight loss journey. He said, all of a sudden, one day, I was in the hospital, and then it just clicked. You need to do something. You need to change your life. It's the same thing. It's similar to people who have substance abuse, that at some point, something goes, okay, I've got to change my life. Ever since that day, he keeps track of everything that he eats in a food journal, exercises at least 2 hours, 6 days each week. He struggled with his weight since childhood. He said he was experiencing depression, anxiety as a result. I got bullied a lot, didn't have many friends. My friends were basically food and TV. But he no longer fears eye contact, loves connecting with new people. And by sharing his story, he wants more people hoping that they can make lifestyle changes they need. He said, it's going to be hard, but you can do it. He said, in the beginning, it's important in the beginning to find any opportunities for movement, like walking to the mailbox, and then track each of your calories as you go and chart your progress. It takes work. It takes a lot of work. But if you're to the point where it's affecting your health, you owe it to the other people in your lives.
Do you know anybody who's had the massive weight reduction and had to get the excess skin sheared off?
How does that work?
The excess skin?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like another surgery.
Yeah, my guess is they start pulling at your feet and then they just machete it off.
I mean, it's when you're losing 600 pounds,
there's a whole bunch of excess skin.
Yeah.
And the body can re-acclimate and reconfigure, but not to that level.
Mm. Yeah, you've definitely, you don't have enough elasticity
right,
in your skin for it to pull back. So you got to go and essentially go to like a plastic surgeon, they can do all this stuff. But it has happened. People have lost that amount of weight. I ran into a guy at the grocery store not that long ago who had told me that he lost like 300-400 pounds or something like that.
Wow.
Yeah, it was pretty wild. And he was going to eventually get the surgery done. Yeah. It's wild. So, all right, anyhow, didn't mean to get down in a heavy...
We did some big life topics today.
Yeah. We did.
Role models. We did how to talk to your kids. We talked about what to do if your roommate is a werewolf.
How about that?
Yeah. All that stuff.
These are life lessons. These are things we need to know. You'd be better for it.
Yeah, suck it, Dr. Phil.
All right, so we're going to take a break. In fact, let's be happy.
All
go to the happy place.
Yeah.
We have Preston and Steve Knight 1 week from tonight at the happy place at the King of Prussia Mall. And we're going to have happy music. And we're going to have you on board. A family four-pack. I'll take caller number 17 at 215-263-WMMR, 6 to 8 p.m. next Thursday. If you'd like to get tickets, they're available. This event's going on through January 5th. You can do it at happyplace.me. It is called the most Instagrammable pop-up in America. So call number 17. You will join us. 215-263-WMMR. We'll be back in a moment.
Thursday from 7 to 9 at Duffer's Tavern, 192 Route 352 in Glen Mills for the Bud Light Platinum Thursday Night Huddle. Enter to win Eagles tickets and signed Eagles merch courtesy of Bud Light Platinum and enjoy $3 Bud and Bud Light drafts and bottles.
93.3 WMMR, everything and everywhere that rocks.
Mr. McWain is out and about tonight with your chance to win all kinds of good stuff, right?
Yeah, I'm at Duffer's. They were here yesterday. We love those guys. Casey, I know you did it last year. It's the Bud Light Platinum Thursday Night Huddle, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. tonight. And we do have tickets for the Eagles game against the Giants on the 9th of December, which is really cool. And then a Brandon Brooks signed helmet as well. So 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., all sorts of Bud Light specials. These events are really good time. Alexa from the calendar from this year or last year. And then also Julie Nicole is going to be there as well. So some cool calendar girls. And we always have fun at these events. So hope you can join us tonight, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m.
Enjoy. Let's get to the Bizarre File.
Now, Bizarre. WMMR presents Bizarre. Kristen and Steve's Bizarre File.
And it's brought to you by HERS, a Philly hometown favorite for generations. Whether you're hosting a tailgate or grabbing a snack on the go, wherever you're snacking, make it Philly, Philly, and grab a bag of your favorite HERS flavors. HERS, forever good. So a New Zealand woman lost at sea for 2 days, survived by eating a handful of candy.
Sea?
45-year-old Kushila Stein was vacationing on a sailboat near the Greek island of Folegandros. She boarded an inflatable boat on Friday to get supplies. A day later, Greek authorities alerted that she was missing. She was found Sunday morning, 40 miles southwest of Folegandros. And Stein said in a statement, I was just blown away, literally blown away in my dinghy. She also.
It's a Christopher Cross song, isn't it?
Blown away in my dinghy. Might have been. She also revealed that she survived on candy that she had with her and wrapped herself in three plastic bags that she had in her bag to keep herself warm at night. She also wore a red bag on her head. That she would be easily spotted. So she was saved, but the candy kept her alive.
When you see someone with a red bag on their head?
In Tennessee, a woman is recovering after being attacked by a white-tailed deer while she was getting the mail on Monday. Now, the deer...
Don't like you to get the mail.
Listen to this story. The deer, which was a year and a half old, four-point, weighing about 75 pounds, was treated like a pet in the neighborhood. And officers had to euthanize it after the attack. Aww. Now, the deer came up from behind the woman, slammed her to the ground outside of a business. Wildlife officers said the deer began goring the woman with its antlers. After the woman fought back and latched onto the deer's antlers, the deer dragged her and continued to attack.
Rattlers!
At that point, three people who saw what was going on came to help the woman and got her to safety. She is now in the hospital with serious injuries. The attack was unprovoked, but Bruce Harris, who says his neighborhood owns the deer, doesn't believe that. He says, I'd say she's a liar.
She's a liar.
If she hadn't grabbed a hold of his antlers, I think she would have. None of this would have happened.
Huh.
Harris said the
deer. There's a little bit of a conspiracy theory here.
This is pretty lengthy, by the way. So right. Harris said the deer, called Louie, was gentle and would never have harmed anyone. He said that his three-year-old granddaughter used to paint its nails. She also painted antlers orange so that no one would shoot him.
Uh-huh.
She said my granddaughter used to come up to him. She used to tap him on the back of his legs, he'd give him his hoof. And she'd paint them fingernails polish.
Right there in front of me, the goddamnest thing I ever saw.
And that, he says, that's how dangerous she was, meaning the deer.
It was beautiful to watch.
Harris said the whole
little girl loving that old deer and that dumb bitch get you killed.
Harris said the whole neighborhood played with the deer and fed it. One neighborhood
stroked it and pet it.
One neighbor even planted extra cherry tomatoes for the deer. When officers tracked the deer down, they noticed that it was wearing an orange collar and acted unnaturally humanized.
It was talking.
I suddenly can talk. And I want you to know how much I cherish my time with your daughter.
You're the best deer ever.
Harris said the collar was another deterrent to keep hunters from shooting the deer. He took.
Are you wearing spats?
He took exception on to how wildlife officers treated the animals. Said I was out there when they came out and got him. Hmm. Very dramatic. They acted like they didn't care. You know.
You know how they are when they come in, not caring about the deer with their toes painted.
Whenever they started to load him, instead of nicely, they grabbed him by the antlers. They just threw him in the truck. Harris said that he has no remorse for what happened to the woman. Said, no, none whatsoever.
Liar.
He said, why should
Liar.
I? He said, why should I? You grab a deer by the antlers, I don't care how tame it is. He thought she wanted to play.
Oh, okay.
Just wanted to play, that's all.
A criminal investigation is ongoing. It is not permitted in the state of Tennessee, by the way, to keep a white-tailed deer as a pet.
Now, if you'll excuse me, I got to go back to my trailer and rub myself.
Except for zoos and authorized wildlife rehabilitators.
So this guy was clearly emotionally connected to the deer.
He was very attached.
And the other woman was gored by it.
That's correct, yeah.
So we have a conflict here.
We do. Well, the Catholic Church has launched an investigation into two missionary nuns who were discovered to be pregnant while working in Africa.
Whoopsie.
Despite their vows of chastity. The two women
who... What does chastity mean again?
Who reportedly belong to separate religious orders in Sicily, Italy, are both now facing pressure to quit the church after discovering that they were expecting children. One of the nuns, a mother superior, by the way, only realized she was pregnant when she visited the hospital complaining of stomach pains. Both nuns are believed to be originally from Africa and were posted to their home continent as part of their charity missions. However, the scandal has caused consternation among the clergy. A church source in Rome said it appears that both women were back in their home nations and obviously had some form of sexual encounter. It's believed that both nuns now have returned to Italy to prepare for the births of their children. And then we'll do one more story. Let's go with this. A Louisiana man was arrested after stealing an electric-powered shopping cart from Walmart to avoid getting a DUI.
This happens a lot, actually.
Bryce Kendall Williams was charged with felony unauthorized use of a movable after driving the motorized shopping cart over a half mile away from one bar to another. He was bar hopping in this thing.
His Walmart cart.
His mom said at $2,500. The deputy responded to a bar in Houma, Louisiana around 12:30 a.m. after receiving a complaint about someone arriving to a bar in a shopping cart.
Boy, oh boy, that looks like one of them there Walmart carts.
When the deputy arrived, he found the shopping cart parked between two cars in the bar's parking lot.
Oh, that's cool.
Williams told the responding deputy that he was at a different bar and thought that if he drove his car, he could get charged with a DUI. Instead, Williams opted to steal the electric shopping cart, which is meant for disabled people, and drive it to a different bar.
He was actually inside trying to buy a remote start for it.
And there you go. That's what I have in the bizarre file for you at this point in time. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll test your knowledge on today's particular program. Have you been listening all morning? Well, we'll find out because we're going to ask a question from earlier in the show. See if you know the answer to that. We'll also get the trash and music news back in a moment.
Listen to all the WMMR podcasts as well as a live stream on your Alexa-enabled device. Just say, Alexa, open MMR.
Say goodbye to juggling paper coupons and missing out on the best deals. Download the Acme mobile app today to have your own personal grocery guru right in your pocket. Use it to plan your shopping list like a pro, get personalized deals on the products you buy most, and choose your shopping style. Whether it's in-store, delivery, or drive-up, where an experienced Acme associate will carefully select, bag your order, even pick up your prescriptions from the pharmacy, and bring it all right to your car. Acme. Fresh foods, local flavors.
Back with more of the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
Hopefully your road is leading you somewhere today, or maybe you're just endlessly driving. You guys ever do that? Ever get out?
I do enjoy to going out for a drive periodically.
Yeah, my daughter and I have been doing that.
That's how I left my last family.
A lot lately. We've just been getting in the car, listening to music, and going wherever the road takes us, and it's kind of fun. I enjoy just kind of aimlessly driving. I've been finding some spots, you know, we've never been down that road before. Let's go down there and see what's down
the
there.
The road not taken.
The road less traveled, absolutely. All right, so it's 4 minutes after 10 o'clock. Going to ask a question of you about today's program, and we're going to give away, if for your correct answer, a pair of tickets. as MMR Rocks Sturgill Simpson, and this will be March 14th at the Met. And the question I have for you this morning is, according to Casey, Marissa is like, what kind of drug for our show? 215-263-WMMR. According to Casey, Marissa is like, what kind of drug for our show? And you had to have heard it earlier this morning in order to get the prize. It's got to be correct, the correct answer. So let's see if you know. 215-263-WMMR. Call right now. We are going to do the trash while you're calling in.
The trash business is a gold mine.
93.3 WMMR with Preston and Steve's Hollywood Trash.
And it is brought to you by Worldwide Stereo's 40th anniversary mega sale. 3 days and two locations. One crazy sale in store only November 8th, 9th, and 10th. At the Montgomeryville and Ardmore stores, biggest sale in 40 years. Details at worldwidestereo.com. What's going on, Steve?
Well, Todd and Julie Chrisley of the reality show Chrisley Knows Best are asking the judge in their federal tax evasion case for permission to travel to the Cayman Islands for Thanksgiving. In fact, Todd Chrisley took it a step further, swearing in a personal letter to the judge that he would not run away with, quote, some muscle-bound beach studs because he's not gay and is happily heterosexual and married and doesn't even think about muscular beach studs with big muscles. Mama June has all but gone totally off the radar. She faces multiple charges, including possession of narcotics. Friends and family are so concerned for Mama June that they are quietly celebrating. And finally, the flashy socks. This is amazing. The flashy socks Michael Jackson moonwalked in from the classic Motown anniversary special are expected to fetch $2 million at auction.
Whoa.
The socks are unique because of their intricate embroidery and also because they still smell of chloroform. That's your Hollywood trash.
$2 million. Wow.
Yep.
That's massive. It's
crazy.
All right. See if somebody knows the answer to this question. According to Casey, Marissa's like, what kind of drug to our show? 215-263-WMMR. It is John who we're going to try out. John, good morning.
Good morning.
All right, John, what kind of drug is Marissa?
Crack.
Crack. Yeah. Yep. You didn't know. What was your. You didn't know you need. We needed.
We didn't know we needed her until we had her.
Until we had her. And there you go. We needed her. All right, John, hang on the line. We're going to get your information. We're going to give you a pair of tickets as MMR Rocks Sturgill Simpson, produced by The Bowery, presents a good-looking tour March 14th at the Met. And tickets are on sale Friday at 10 a.m. via SturgillSimpson.com. Complete details at WMMR.com.
Now, Preston and Steve's Music News on 93.3 WMMR. Yeah! Yeah!
That's Kathy, by the way.
Yeah.
Brought to you this morning by Dietz & Watson, the official deli meat, cheese, franks, and sausages of the Eagles. Start your pregame with their fan favorite. 100% all beef franks. Any idea what you were doing when you were screaming like that?
Ooh.
I don't remember.
Are you trying to impersonate my hawk sound? I think Steve challenged
me. It had something to do with... Yes, with birds. I know it did have to do with birds.
I thought you were in trying to impress Richard Gere.
No, I don't think that's what I was doing. I really don't remember.
Yeah, of Nick's caw or whatever sound he did. We were supposed to be like a peahen.
And I think
that. I think that's you doing your version of that.
By the way, that sound that you hear, there is a movie called the Giant Claw. And the creature, the large bird in that movie, makes a sound that's almost exactly like Kathy's bird call.
Oh, really?
If we can find that sound, you can compare and contrast.
We're going to start with this. Stone Sour will release its first official live album. It's called Hello, You Bastards, live in Reno. December 13th is when that comes out. 16 of the band's most popular tracks captured at a single show, including Absolute Zero, Through Glass, Brother, Get Inside, and Song Number 3, all recorded live on October 5th. 2018. It will be available on CD digitally and as a numbered 180 gram double vinyl package, limited to just 2,500 copies.
Bastard!
Also includes a poster and backstage pass, guitar pick, autograph set list, and download card. Guitarist Josh Rand said, "This is the Reno show in its entirety. Just how it went down on October 5th, 2018. We're extremely proud of the fact that it's 100% live with absolutely no overdubs. It's not perfect, but neither are we."
So,
Yeah, because sometimes they do edits on live albums.
They do, and they'll put a couple of shows together. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Coldplay has teased another new track for their upcoming album, Everyday Life, and it veers into decidedly darker and more political territory for the British band. Titled Guns, a snippet of the song was released yesterday on the group's Instagram. The song and accompanying artwork both tackle the American gun control debate. The tune is the opening track for the second half of Everyday Life, which is subtitled Sunset. The first half of the record is subtitled Sunrise. The song seems to take a darker turn than the first two songs released from the record. Those were Orphans and Arabesque. Everyday Life arrives on November 22nd and follows up 2015's A Head Full of Dreams. Flea has opened up about his longtime relationship with Chili Peppers frontman Anthony Kiedis, both in a new interview with The Guardian and his new memoir, Acid for the Children.
What's he say?
Which arrived on Tuesday. He said he recalled that Kiedis was unlike anyone he had ever met, adding, "Among my friends, I was the guy who was always trying to do something that would freak people out. And then I met Anthony and he matched me step for step. We got up to all kinds of crazy S." He also described Anthony as controlling in the memoir, but he declined to elaborate on it to The Guardian, saying the two bandmates had issues between them that he wasn't willing to discuss. But Flea did say he doesn't accept that I'm different and that things that excite me may not excite him. He's looking to be the alpha. Flea also explained how Kiedis' drug abuse affected him over the years, saying it's painful and scary and sad because the rationale of someone who's a drug addict is disingenuous and hollow and misguided. Elsewhere in the memoir, Flea described his own battles with drug addiction and his grief when early Chili Peppers guitarist Hillel Slovak had died of an overdose at the age of only 26. So that's one I wouldn't mind thumbing through.
How long have they been bandmates, him and Anthony?
They've known each other since high school.
Wow.
Yeah, so they've been friends that long. And I'm not sure when the Red Hot Chili Peppers started, if it was during high school or not. But they go back that far. And then finally, it seems as though there just may be more than four members of KISS on stage for the band's final show. It's been reported that KISS manager Doc McGee shed some light on the plan for the band's farewell gig, July 17, 2021, at the venue to be determined in the hometown of New York City. During a formal chat with fans on board the KISS cruise, McGee revealed that Ace and Peter will be and have been invited to come and play with us anytime. Like I always say, people in New York would love to see Joe Namath still play football for the Jets.
Joe Namath was our original bassist.
He says, unfortunately, he can't. We want to include everybody that played with KISS to celebrate the 45 years of KISS. Of the nine official members of KISS, only two have passed on. Drummer Eric Carr, best known to fans as The Fox, replaced Peter Criss behind the drums on the road in 1980. Illness forced Carr to step down from the band in 1990. He died at age 41 from complications.
Though I tried hard, I wanted him to dress as a chicken.
He
would not.
He wouldn't do it. Yeah,
he felt it was not flattering.
He died from a rare form of heart cancer.
He preferred the furtive nature of a fox.
In 1991.
Over the more majestic poultry.
I understand. Well, you know, I'm glad you gave him at least the leeway.
Life is full of regrets.
The common courtesy to let him be a fox. By the way, he died on the same day as Freddie Mercury.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, that's a bummer because that's going to eclipse.
Yep. And then Vinnie Vincent's replacement, a guy named Mark St. John, played on the Animalize album and only performed two full shows with the band before leaving in 1984 when he was replaced by Bruce Kulick.
Again, side two was supposed to be called Chickens.
St. John died. It was going to be like one track on side two that was just Chickens.
Like
was
a Pink Floyd.
Okay.
Like the Animals album.
Right. Okay.
There was Dogs, I think, on one side, right? And then we wanted to have Chickens on side.
St. John died on April 5th of 2007 due to a brain hemorrhage brought on by accident. I'm not laughing at him having died.
It is
brain
funny
hemorrhage.
When people die of horrible things. I understand. You don't have to explain.
And, Nick, why'd you pull up a Wikipedia page of Anton Figg?
Because he was a drummer for the band for a hot minute. And
stop it.
Yeah, and I didn't know if he would be involved. And I also wanted to remember if Anton was still alive or not.
Anton Figg produced Nirvana, did he not?
No, you're thinking
that's Butch
Vig.
Butch Vig.
Hold on, it's Butch Vig.
Yes.
Anton Fig was a drummer for the Letterman show, the late night with David Letterman.
What's the thing when you put ginger up your ass?
That's Fig.
Fig Newtons.
All right. And now we're clear.
But Anton was in Kiss for a hot minute, and I was wondering if he would be invited to any of this.
When was he in Kiss?
Man, I don't know.
I met Anton
right before the Chicken tour.
Oh, okay.
I have a legit Kiss question, though.
79 and 80.
Please ask.
When members were replaced, did they wear the makeup of the member that they were replacing?
Some did, didn't they?
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
They do now. They didn't before because Eric Carr, he had a different, he was the Fox.
He was the Fox.
Okay. His makeup was different. And Vinnie Vincent, I don't know what he, oh, he had the Ankh. Remember, we talked about that not that long ago.
Which was stupid.
Yes.
Ankh.
Sailong Hong Kong.
Sailong Hong Kong. You're going to be Nell.
What?
In the band?
That's right.
All right.
Star Child. And you're Nell.
I guess.
The Toothless Backwoods Imbecile? Yes.
Regarding co-founders Ace Frehley, Peter Criss, and the band's second lead guitarist Vinnie Vincent McGee said, we're still looking at where what we're going to do on the final show of Kiss. And yes, they've all been talked to about it, so I can see us doing something.
They need to. I mean,
yeah.
So this is the final, again, this is not the final show ever of Kiss. This is the final show of their touring life on this scale, correct?
No, this is it, dude. This is the farewell gig.
Really?
July 17th, 2021, and that's when they're going to be done.
I don't buy it.
Touring anymore, so yeah.
I think there's still a lot to do.
So they said that, yeah, we've spoken to those guys about it. It's very difficult, though, when people say, okay, you should bring up Ace and Peter. But, I mean, how do you do that when you have two Catmen and two Spacemen? So
we need a larger cat box.
You say, okay, you don't wear makeup. You don't wear makeup, and you wear makeup. And then we go, well, that was my makeup.
Who did I tell to wear makeup?
And I don't know. So they're working on it. And there you go. But everybody's going to be involved somehow or
You're not. Going to be a liger.
And that a liger?
Probably my favorite animal.
Yeah. Anyhow, and that's all I have in music news for you. Let's take a break, shall we?
Well, yes. Well, we have a couple of different things. We got the giant claw bird sound.
Okay.
And we have the origin of Kathy's bird call.
Ooh.
Which one do you want to hear first?
Origin.
The origin, yes.
Origin okay. story, always.
All right. There you go.
One more time, now that you got it.
That's what it was.
You sound like a monster.
Very good. Actually, you sound like the annoying wife of that raven.
Wow. Okay. And then we have the actual from what's the movie called?
It's a giant claw, the classic.
Giant claw.
Yeah, it's about a huge chicken.
Right.
It's a 60s science fiction movie. It's horrible.
Right. Here we go. Similar in tone. It's a little more rapid fire. Yeah. We're looking at a clip of this. It's the stupidest thing I've ever seen.
It's horrible. So and as the story goes, and this is the truth, this movie was made, and they had the actors. The script is actually pretty good, and they farmed the special effects out to a movie special effects house in Mexico.
Yeah.
And so the night of the premiere. They'd never seen the effects of the movie. It literally looks like they put a mop hand, you know.
Yeah.
That's how bad the thing looks. And they were just, oh, my God, what are we watching?
It's funny. All right. All right, now let's take a break. Come back in a second. Get that letter today for the Word of the Week prize. We got two letters to go, so don't miss it. We'll be right back.
The Preston and Steve Show podcast, 93.3 WMMR, everything that rocks.
Man, starting to hit a brick wall. I'm getting tired, man.
You a little better today, but
I feel a smidge better than I did yesterday, but I'm still physically pretty wiped out.
I know. We had our conference call last night, and I told you throughout the course of yesterday, I was encountering a number of people who commiserated with you and Marissa.
Yeah.
This sort of energy sucking. It's not a stomach virus or anything, but it's just a cold.
Mine was sore throat and congestion, chest congestion, and then it just turned into just lethargy, malaise, whatever that description is. You know, when you just feel bad, you know, and that's what it was. So But finally today, feeling a little bit better. But I went to bed at freaking 7:45 last night.
Wow.
Yeah, so that helped. But anyhow, and Marissa says she's feeling a little bit better. So whatever this is, it's got a it's fairly quick.
Shelf life.
Yeah, it's got a week on it tops as far as feeling really, really bad goes. But nonetheless, today has been fun, and I would like to thank Dave Landau.
Yeah.
Dave was great.
Dave was great.
He's going to be at Helium tonight. There's one show at 8 o'clock, and then Friday and Saturday, there are two shows you can access. Those are at 7:30 and 10 p.m., so go see Dave. He's a good guy. Let me see, and I guess the only other thing, other than thanking our sponsors and finding out what's up tomorrow, is the letter of the day. So, Case, you want to handle that?
Yeah, I can probably do it.
Here we go.
Preston and Steve on 93.3 WMMR.
Now, the Daily Letter.
All right, and the Preston and Steve Show is brought to you today by the letter.
I think the letter is going to be N, as in Nanapuya.
All right, N as in Nanapuya. And don't forget that we have a pair of tickets
to
three, count them, three sold-out WMMR concert events. Tool, November 18th at the Wells Fargo Center. The Struts, November 28th at the Fillmore. And Greta Van Fleet, who will be performing December 29th at the Met. So we'll give all three of those away tomorrow, and you will be set for the season as far as concerts go. So, yeah, I guess we'll just thank our sponsors and get ready to be on our merry way. The Preston, I keep an eye out on the door.
I can hear it in your voice. You're like, well, is he coming?
Oh, I just saw Pancake. He gave me the he ain't coming thing.
All right, yeah. Well, he's out.
Or shrugged shoulders.
He's out in his car listening to Rupert Holmes.
Rupert Holmes. Well, after yesterday, we brought him back around.
Oh, absolutely.
He wanted to hear the song one more time, just to be sure.
We could play it for him.
Okay.
All right, so I want to thank our sponsors. Preston and Steve Show brought to you today by Meineke, America's Choice for Auto Repair. Also brought to you by Family and Company Jewelers, South Jersey's largest diamond destination, Route 70 in Marlton, New Jersey. Tonight, Nick McWain, you are at Duffer's, right?
Yes, sir. 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. It's in Delco and Glen Mills, and great Bud Light specials. You can win tickets to the Eagles Giants game and a Brandon Brooks autographed helmet.
Can I suggest something that you eat while you're there to anybody who's going? Whatever that Brussels sprout thing they had was yesterday.
So good.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, the chicken, the Brussels sprouts, everything that they brought in yesterday was top notch.
And it was unexpected, too. I'm like, oh, okay, roasted Brussels sprouts, whatever. I'll pop one in my mouth. I'm like, what did you make these with? They were fantastic.
Whoa!
Yeah. So get those while you're there.
Yes, sir.
All right. Tomorrow on our program, if you like Mr. Kevin Smith will be in our studio.
Hey! Love it. Love it.
The Kevin Smith conversations are awesome. So I'm very much looking forward to seeing him tomorrow. And it's Friday, so we give away a Word of the Week prize and wrap up whatever we got, man. That's it. We are done. Rage on and have a great day, gang. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
The Preston and Steve Love You, Hate You Line.
I can't comprehend why sometimes you look in your paycheck, they're at the very bottom where they deduct from the taxes. Sometimes they'll just say remainder. They'll tell you what it is. This is crooked. Screw you people.
Next message.
Oh my God, Preston!
Next message.
All right, you guys do me a favor. You got to tell Pierre to stop saying gymnasium. Just tell him the gym. You know how girls hate the word voiced? I hate gymnasium.
The Preston and Steve Love You, Hate You line.
Call 484-434-1333.
MMR rocks.
Brought to you by DellToyota.com and DellChevrolet.com.
Jack, sell them for less.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.